about ways to ride the bus to save the planet. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. This is Deborah Lindsay, KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Dan Revive reporting live.
I tried to reassure myself that everything was okay.
The mother of a girl with autism, Teresa Cedillo from Arizona, testifies that her daughter Michelle stopped talking, then lost her vision, had seizures so violent she broke a leg, and her lawyer claims scientific evidence that a measles vaccine caused her to become autistic. A federal claims panel in Washington considers her case and others to rule whether up to 4,800 families might get compensation from a multi-billion dollar fund set up by Congress for victims of vaccines that turned out to be dangerous. Arthur Allen, who's written a book on this, says federal experts doubt vaccinations caused autism.
Just the fact that autism rates continue to be very high and are perhaps growing, even in populations of children who were not vaccinated with thimerosal.
A preservative that used to be part of childhood vaccines. I'm Dan Revive with more CBS News. Harley Carnes.
National Guard were sent to the Mexican border to help stop the illegal immigration, not help make it happen. Three National Guardsmen assigned to Border Patrol have been busted and arraigned. U.S. Attorney Don DeGabriel.
All three are charged with conspiring to transport 24 illegal aliens.
A federal appeals court in Richmond, Virginia, says the Bush administration is wrong on enemy combatants in the case of one legal U.S. resident. And the court says the government cannot hold him without filing charges. It's a constitutional question. Reaction, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez.
We're disappointed. We've decided we're going to seek rehearing en banc before the entire circuit. Would remind you that this is an individual that was in the training, Osama bin Laden's training camp in 2001.
The Senate is voting now, by the way, on a procedural measure that could lead to a no-confidence resolution against Gonzalez in the Senate. Walking in space, doing some work at the International Space Station.
Wow, this is beautiful out here.
Astronauts James Riley and Danny Olivas are connecting a 36,000-pound segment to the station to increase its power capacity. Paris Hilton goes the rap, proves that rich folks get special treatment by the system in Los Angeles.
The L.A. County Sheriff, still under fire for allowing Paris Hilton briefly to return to her home last week, met with the Reverend Al Sharpton. Sharpton told the sheriff, it appears there are different kinds of justice for different people.
It is clear to many of us that Ms. Hilton was afforded a kind of treatment that was not afforded many people that are of working class.
Meanwhile, a grassroots campaign has begun to recall the sheriff. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Eating fast food in China can be a real adventure, evidently. A woman says she was sitting in McDonald's. A rat ran up her leg into her dress and bit her on the thigh, then got away. Now she says she's afraid of little white mice and rabbits. She went to court and won. She'll be paid $290. On Wall Street, the Dow was up a fraction, NASDAQ down a point. Oil prices, $65.97 a barrel, up $1.21. This is CBS News.
And now, the Orkin Inspectors.
Spring love is in the air. Two insects meet. They make quite a pair. It's mating season.
For pest protection that performs, call 1-800-ORKINMAN or visit orkin.com.
Get the good stuff.
Hi, Michael Waltrip here. You don't have to drive a 500-mile race to know the importance of getting the most out of a tank of gas. Let NAPA help make your fuel go further with 3M Complete Fuel System Cleaner for just $8.49 a bottle. It not only keeps your car running smooth, it also restores power and fuel efficiency. The pros have trusted 3M car care products for years, and you can too. NAPA. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
A handshake, just part of good communication, and one study says an important part of doctor-patient relationship. Just don't get your feelings hurt if the doc wipes his hands with a disinfectant afterward.
Do you want your doctor to shake your hand? In a survey led by Northwestern researcher Gregory McCool, 8 of 10 people said yes. Half wanted the doctor to greet them with their first names. Since opinion is split on that, this Archives of Internal Medicine study recommends that doctors initially use the patient's first and last names and then keep an eye out for communication cues.
This is one of those mundane things that really matters.
Barry Bagnetto, CBS News, Washington.
Question: how drunk or angry or both would you have to be in a bar fight not to know you'd lost a finger till you got outside? That's when a man in Sydney, Australia, realized his digit was missing. Police brought the finger to the hospital. No word whether it was reattachable. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
For most people, there's no substitute for instant gratification. Yet some people can wait if something better's coming along. At Orbitz, in a desperate attempt to feel popular, we're giving you both. So, if you book the hotel and flight you want together on Orbitz, you'll save now. And you'll save $250 later when you customize a package to Hawaii, Mexico, or the Caribbean. Instant gratification now and the $250 savings later.
Book at Orbitz.com and stay a step ahead. Save $250 on qualifying 5-plus night vacations, travel and book by March 31st, 2008. Subject to availability, see site for terms and conditions.
For TomTom Radio, this is Morning Drive Time DJ Guy.
Hey, it's that time again. Father's Day is coming up, and this year, try giving Dad something that won't end up here. God, I love that. Like a TomTom, the portable GPS device that's so user-friendly, the old man will be begging for something new to complain about. Am I right? Just a few quick taps on the screen, and he's headed anywhere he was. Does it get any easier? I think not.
Jarringly simple. That's TomTom, the number 1-1 GPSS in the world.
Peter B. Collins!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. The saga of the Sopranos is behind us. Paris Hilton is safely behind bars. So it's safe for us to move on to other topics today, and we'll do that on the PBC show. We're going to talk about the media. Eric Bollard from Media Matters for America will be joining us momentarily here. And coming up on the half hour, Murray Waas will join us. W-A-A-S is how he spells his last name. He's a reporter for the National Journal. He spent however long it took in the courtroom there at the Libby trial to compile an annotated transcript of the trial called The United States versus I. Lewis Libby. Also, Murray Waas has been doing excellent reporting on the U.S. attorney scandal, the Alberto Gonzalez amnesia scandal. So he's going to be with us for an entire hour, and we'll split it between Libby and the Gonzalez problem. Then in our second hour, Kimberly Lissagor, a freelance writer who has published an excellent piece in the current issue of Mother Jones magazine, will be with us to explain how the idea of carbon cap and trade schemes actually works. I mean, so far, it seems to me like a neat idea, but kind of like buying indulgences back there in the Dark Ages.
I may be wrong, but you're...
Maybe that's what those indulgences were for. And if you were listening to our program Friday, we were the first to break the news, courtesy of our intrepid reporter, Brad Friedman, at bradblog.com, about the sale of the 5 acres in Crawford, Texas, that Cindy Sheehan bought a few years ago. And Bree Walker, a progressive talk show host, former news anchor from Los Angeles, will be joining us to kick off the Free Speech Zone today to talk about the crazy idea she had to buy it so that really crazy people couldn't. And now she's got a piece of property, and she's got to figure out how to maintain it. And I explained to her that many of our listeners had come forward with pledges to help buy the property from Cindy Sheehan. And so we'll see if we can merge those interests as we kick off the Free Speech Zone a couple of hours from now. That's all ahead. At any moment, though, you can call in with a question or a comment. That's how it works here on the PBC show. Toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8255. 800-800-8372, toll free. And my email is always up here, and I look during the breaks, peter@peterbcollins.com. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. Eric Bollard joins us. He's with Media Matters for America. Eric, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me. Hey, you mentioned the end of The Sopranos show. I just have to say the final scene, which was at Holston's, is less than a mile from my house.
No kidding.
So we're very proud of that here in North Jersey.
And is the food good there?
It's great. I was there with my son Saturday night.
Oh. Well, I have to say that I'm still processing that.
I know. A lot of people are.
And when the screen went blank, I said, hey, what happened? Did the show end early? Is there a technical glitch at HBO?
Leave it to David Chase. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, but it did defy most predictions. I give him credit for that. It was not a predictable outcome or ending for the show.
No, no. And I'm not as outraged as some loyal fans are, I guess.
Well, those are people who probably don't get outraged at some of the other excesses of the media.
I know.
Maybe they've had their outrage glands or software modified.
That's right.
Well, Eric, let's start off with a couple of quickie items, and then in the second segment here, I want to talk about the two books that were published last week about Hillary Rodham Clinton. And, well, it appears the fact-checkers were laid off before the books were published. Carl Bernstein, by the way, is on the West Coast promoting his book this week, and we may be able to connect with him later in the week. We're working on that right now. But first up, let's talk about the Fox News Channel and how they observed the indictments, 16 of them, returned against Congressman William Jefferson of Louisiana by putting up a picture of John Conyers, the guy whose only connection to Jefferson is that he's a Democrat and he's an African-American.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly lends credence to the notion that maybe folks at Fox all see all black Democrats as the same. And as Media Matters found out, we did a little digging, it's not the first time that Fox put up the wrong photo mm-hmm. of an African-American Democrat. Once they were doing an item on Obama, and they put up Harold Ford Jr.
Yeah.
So then Fox made the mistake, incredibly embarrassing with the Conyers, because they were talking about an indicted congressman,
yeah.
and they put up one of the most senior-ranking members of the Democratic Party.
And the House, he's the chair of the House Judiciary
right.
Committee.
Arguably the most, you know, one of the top three most powerful members of Congress. And then their strategy of apology was the next day, I think, they aired this very amorphous, I mean, if you didn't know the backstory, you had almost no idea what they were talking about. One of their anchors sort of apologized for something about a photo.
Wait a minute.
They never mentioned it was Jefferson. They never mentioned it was Conyers. It took them a couple of days to actually get up the nerve to formally explain what happened and then apologize for it.
Well, Eric, I think you didn't get the memo. The Bush administration has redefined the apology thing.
Right.
And a commander guy only has to admit that mistakes were made, never by whom. Never exactly what the mistakes were. You know, it's counterproductive. It gets you bogged down in what already happened.
It lowers morale. What's very embarrassing for Fox is this all comes about at a time when there's a debate over the debates. The Democratic Black Caucus had signed up to sponsor a debate with Fox News, and lots of progressives have urged candidates to boycott it, pointing out that Fox News not only not a legitimate news organization, it's certainly no friend to Democrats, and it's certainly no friend to African-American Democrats. And Fox News says, oh, no, no, we have a great record. And then they put up the wrong photo of an indicted congressman.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all very embarrassing at the precise time they're trying to put on a brave face and to show that they're fair and balanced.
And did Fox
minority Democrat.
Did Fox offer to have the man they labeled a Democrat, Mark Foley, maybe be moderator of one of the debates?
Right, right. That was another classic follow-up. Mistakes
do happen.
Yeah, the Foley thing I can see as a mistake. Obviously, this was a mistake too, but it just offers a bit of a more embarrassing insight into, I guess, how producers.
But do we know if Fox has made mistakes by putting up the wrong Republican, or, you know, are all those people featured on trading cards that are hanging in the washroom at Fox so that they know exactly who all the Republicans are?
I think it's a good point. I mean, you can sort of come away with this notion that the Fox folks have a very good feeling for the Republican team, and when Democrats pop up, they're still quite not sure who's who, even though they've been in business for over 10 years now.
Well, and Bill Jefferson is in a class by himself, the guy with the 90,000 FBI cash in his freezer.
Right.
I mean, you'd think that that is notorious enough that they could say, oh, yeah, he, you know, he doesn't really look like that much like Conyers.
Yeah, you'd think they would have that B-roll ready to go, that, you know, the background video that they run.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think they would have that ready to go. I mean, it's been an ongoing story for at least a year now in terms of possible indictments, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show this video of Conyers, you know, basically up on the Hill holding hearings. I mean, there's just no connection between the two.
And now for something completely different, let's go over to MSNBC, where Chris Matthews has been busy slobbering all over outgoing White House Communications Director Dan Bartlett. Let's listen to the video.
Welcome back to Harbaugh. Dan Bartlett is counselor to President Bush. He's been with President Bush back since his first campaign for governor 14 years ago. Today he announced he's stepping out into that cruel world known as the private sector. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow.
Oh, Chris,
Dan, all
don't
these years, months of trying to get me in to see the president, and I know you did your best, so I forgive you. Let me.
Now, here he is kissing up to a guy who never got him face
to
face
with Bush. I know, isn't that great? I mean, it's absolutely classic. it's just this whole, I mean, they didn't go to Georgetown, but it's just got this feeling of, like, you know, the drinking halls at Georgetown, and everyone's. You know, everyone knows each other, and obviously I can't, Chris Matthews probably can't even count the number of times he's run into Bartlett socially in Washington over the last years. Mm-hmm. And then the classic part is the one thing Matthews wanted over the last 7 years was an interview with George Bush, and Bartlett failed miserably making that happen, and he's still singing his praises. It's just very insightful. You know, these cable shows, they try to be entertaining, and it's certainly not 60 minutes. You know, Hardball is not 60 minutes of hard-hitting analysis all the time. They try to lighten it up. But it certainly shows the real camaraderie that a lot of these talking heads had with the very senior Bush White House staff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, try to imagine, you know, Chris Matthews having Sidney Blumenthal on in 1998, when, you know, Sidney Blumenthal had just a senior position in the Clinton White House, and serenading him with a, you know, jolly good fellow and sort of, you know, rhetorically throwing his arms around him and swaying back and forth. I mean, there just was not that connection that the D.C. chattering class did not have with the Clinton White House.
Well, and
they still feel very fraternal with this Bush clan, even as it sort of goes down in flames.
And Eric Bollard, this was not the lowest moment that I witnessed on Hardball last week. The lower moment was when Tom DeLay appeared to respond. Well, first of all, the show was delayed. There may have been a segment one, but either the one of those, you know, white girls who got kidnapped stories, or maybe it
right.
was Paris Hilton breaking news, delayed the start of the show. So they just go cold, slamming into segment two, and up pops Tom DeLay. And Tom is there to critique the Republican joint appearance in New Hampshire the night before. Not a word is mentioned about how Tom DeLay left the Congress.
Right.
Not even a polite inquiry. Hey, how the legal fees going there? How's the case in Texas, Tom? Nothing. I mean, they never even reference, the dark side of Tom DeLay. It's just he's this happy talk Republican.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Chris Matthews in particular just had this very warm spot for Tom DeLay. A couple months ago, Matthews sort of rolled out the carpet for DeLay in a very embarrassing way. And again, yeah, I mean, DeLay is absolute, you know, he's sort of this poster boy for this inept, you know, corrupt Republican gang that was running Congress.
Well, wait, can I amp it up? He's a toxic agent for change in the wrong direction.
But, you know, he must love Hardball because when he's there, he's in this little bubble where he's just a Republican wise man brought
mm-hmm.
in to pontificate about the upcoming election.
And he negotiates ground rules that nobody gets to come on with him. So
obviously, I think, I don't have a lot of faith in the Beltway Press, but I think anyone else would show up would at least make passing reference to, are you going to jail soon?
Yeah.
Which is a distinct possibility.
We got to take a break. Eric Bolden is with us. Visit the website MediaMatters.org. And as we continue, we'll talk about books bashing Hillary and how Bill O'Reilly had some crocodile tears for Cindy Sheehan. And we'll deliver that from the point of view of Keith Olbermann. It's tasty. It's next. This is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Have you heard the show? Weekdays from noon to 2 on KRXA 540.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with Eric Bollert from Media Matters for America. Their powerful website is at mediamatters.org. And last week, like many, we took notice of Cindy Sheehan's letter of quote-unquote resignation, as the front person for the peace movement. And here on this program, we wish her well. Some of our listeners pledged money to buy the acreage in Crawford. Bree Walker, who actually did buy it, is going to join us a couple of hours from now, and we'll talk about that. We may be able to convert your interest in supporting over to Bree Walker. But it was fascinating to see the way media characters played their own reaction to people like Cindy Sheehan. And first and foremost, Bill O'Reilly had a case of amnesia that rivals Alberto Gonzalez. And we catch it from the angle of Keith Olbermann, who, of course, takes no prisoners and declares O'Reilly one of the worst persons of the day or the moment.
Where is Bill O? Anybody's wondering who's really speaking when one of those anonymous Fox Noise spokesmen issued us a hypocritical statement that ends with, "We wish them well," Billy just gave it away. On Cindy Sheehan's retirement from the anti-war limelight, Bill O'Reilly actually said, quote, "I don't like to see any Americans suffer the way I think Miss Sheehan has suffered, from losing her son to being personally attacked. And we wish her well." In August 2005, O'Reilly said she was guilty of conduct which, quote, "other American families who have lost sons and daughters in Iraq think borders on treasonous." 2 months later, he issued a fatwa, a list of cowards who would not appear on his show, and among them, Cindy Sheehan. But he doesn't want to see her personally attacked. Well, maybe he just forgot he called her a coward or a traitor. I mean, if you or I were as full of crap as Bill is, would we really remember each time we messed our pants? Bill O'Reilly, today's
one. I think that needs no further comment, but, Eric, I will note that Media Matters has many other examples of occasions where O'Reilly has hammered Cindy Sheehan.
Yeah, called her dumb. When the Sheehan story first broke during that summer, his big theme was she was being used by the left. She was too dumb to figure it out. And then when it became obvious she was embracing the anti-war left, then he decided she was treasonous and a coward and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But Olbermann makes a great point about the amount of sewage that comes out of Fox News, and how on earth would you possibly remember
right. All
the people you slander?
Now, let's turn, because Media Matters has kind of gone into extra innings to take up two books that were published in the past week about Hillary Rodham Clinton in advance of her run for president. And you were assigned the Jeff Gerth book, and you wrote a powerful column about the various mistakes that he has repeated, that appeared in his original reporting about Whitewater in the New York Times, and now it appears that he lazily just cut and pasted that stuff into this new book.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Gerth became famous for his Whitewater reporting which did not hold up over time, and with reporting that eventually led to a $40 million Kenneth Starr investigation in which the independent counsel concluded there was nothing whatsoever regarding the Clintons' money-losing real estate deal from the 1970s in Arkansas. Gerth then went on to make lots of mistakes in the Wenhoe Lee story and the satellite technology transfer story to China during the 70s. Gerth was sort of the point man for the greatest hits at the Times in terms of their conspiratorial pursuit of the Clintons. So with the new book that he co-authored, Her Way, obviously, Whitewater is going to be revisited. It was interesting.
I can't wait.
Yeah, and it was interesting that a lot of the early sensational reporting that Gerth had made in the Times simply sort of went down the memory hole. It's nowhere to be found because it turned out to be categorically wrong.
Well, come on, Eric. It has been carefully shredded and placed next to Bill O'Reilly's comments about Cindy Sheehan.
Right, I mean, well, I think Gerth is a different category. I think he knew exactly what he was getting. It was sort of like a scalpel. I mean, he knew what exactly would not fly and what exactly could not be reprinted with any sort of seriousness.
Mm-hmm. Eric?
So entire chapters are just went down the memory hole.
Just about 20 seconds remaining. Pick one glaring example about Gerth's error ways.
Oh, in the Whitewater days, one of the original stories, he portrayed Beverly Bassett Schaefer as this Clinton-appointed hack who went easy on Jim McDougal's SNL. What he failed to report was that Beverly Schaefer faxed him 20-page memo, which he completely ignored, and that was how the Whitewater was able to sustain itself, by ignoring reporting.
Much more about it at MediaMatters.org. Thanks, Eric Bowler.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Todd the Taxi Driver, and today we're going to talk about urban legends and how you can participate in one tomorrow and help create a new one. Urban legend says that in either the 70s or the 80s, American consumers took one day and didn't buy gasoline. The legend says it worked. Gas prices dropped 30 cents a gallon by the next day. Sounds really good, but unfortunately, it never happened. But just because something didn't happen in the past, and it is an urban legend, doesn't mean it's not actually a good idea, and it can't have some positive results if people do it today. I personally believe that when any group of people get together and unite behind a common cause, it's a good thing. There are no losers. So tomorrow, don't buy gas. And who knows, maybe it will make a difference. Maybe 5 years from now, there'll be the urban legend about how Americans reacted to an urban legend and really made a difference. This is Todd the Taxi Driver saying, don't let the truth or reality get in the way of changing the world.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
I'm Todd Hurlbert, and I invite you to listen to The Week in Politics at our new time, 7 p.m. Monday nights. We're Monterey's hardest-hitting political hot talk. We cover local politics, also tell you what's going on in Washington, D.C. And most importantly, we take your calls and find out what you think. So if you haven't listened to us before, find out what we're all about. Monday night, 7 p.m. It's The Week in Politics. See you there.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, then we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Ooh.
investigative journalist Murray Wass joins us for the next hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I have in my hands here the brand new edition, The United States versus I. Lewis Libby. It's the trial transcript annotated and detailed by Murray Wass, who covered the trial from start to finish. Murray, welcome to our program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure to talk with you. I've been admiring your work online and elsewhere, and it's a pleasure to talk with you for the first time. Did you hear the music that was playing just before you joined us?
I did.
And our trick question is, can you identify it?
I'm at a loss.
Okay. It's Spy in the House of Love from the band Was Not Was.
I didn't know that. What year did that come out?
Late 80s.
I don't think I was born yet.
How old are you?
No, I'm joking. I think I was. I didn't listen to. I skipped the whole 80s as a listening decade.
All right. Well, I want you to go to your favorite used CD shop and pick up any CD by Was Not Was. It was two guys from Detroit who pretended to be brothers named Was, and neither one of them was named Was.
Okay.
And they made some great music, kind of, as you can hear, R&B-infused rock and roll. And that's one of the songs we play about the NSA surveillance program, Spy in the House of Love. So you definitely need to add that to your musical collection. With a name like Was, do you say Was or Was?
I think Was. Mm-hmm. Murray Was,
yeah.
Actually.
Okay. And it's spelled
W. You can call me Was.
Yeah?
Or you can call me Was.
Well, first of all, I just want to call you competent and capable. The work that you did on the U.S. versus I. Scooter Libby is excellent, and I think this is the book that anybody who has followed this case with interest has to pick up, because you offer your own commentary, but the transcript is here, and it's rich with the details that didn't fit even in the web-based reporting that had greater space limits to work with, and it is fascinating for people to be able to read the transcript and the testimony of the individuals who were there. And in the back, you've got a lot of the exhibits that were introduced in the trial, so it's fascinating stuff. Now let's start at the end, which was the sentencing hearing last week in front of Judge Walton. Were you surprised at the 30 months, $250,000, with the start date of the sentence to be named maybe sometime this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think the judge surprised everybody a little bit and sent an extraordinary tough message, and was sending a message with his sentencing. He doubled the amount of time and agreed with the prosecution, but he put aside the recommendation by the probation office, which is very rare, and especially in a white-collar crime. And so the probation office was willing to settle on 15 to 18 months, which is a really long sentence usually for a white-collar case like this. So I think the sentencing and the judge's comments exemplified or underscored his strong, him trying to make a strong statement, I think, about the role of law and about the conduct of the defendant in the case.
Mm-hmm. And given your intimacy with the trial, your knowledge of the details, just how much does it piss you off when you hear people talk about how unfair this is, and Fred Thompson thinks that, this is a draconian sentence. He is encouraging the president to issue a pardon to Libby.
Well, the judge made this extraordinary kind of facetious statement in response to some of this criticism. I don't know if people are aware of it, but there were a number of very high-powered attorneys who wanted to volunteer their time to help on behalf of an appellate brief and to voluntarily advise Judge Walton as to why what he was doing was wrong. And I think he kind of slammed it back onto their side of the court by saying he looks forward to them being present for other defendants and volunteering in other cases when defendants are in trouble. And I think what he was saying between the lines is, look, I have defendants before my court all the time, and nobody's giving them the time of day. They're not getting a defense. And this particular judge, before he was a federal judge, he was a judge in the Superior Court of the District of Columbia, so he had a lot of poor defendants. He had a lot of minority defendants. He had a lot of people going to jail for drug cases, and he was a hard sentencer in those cases as well. So essentially what he's saying is no double standard here.
Well, and that's encouraging. That could be justice, depending on exactly how it all plays out. Now, he held over for a hearing that I think is going to resume this week regarding the prospects for an appeal and whether Libby should be free on bail as appeals are pending. And people who I've talked to who know more than I do have read Judge Walton as saying he's very unlikely to grant that. Part of it is it would be kind of an invitation to be reversed on appeal, because a judge, in order to free somebody at this stage, has to essentially certify that there is some probability that an appeal would be successful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the greatest likelihood is that Scooter Libby will be remanded into custody, and Judge Walton will order that and not let him stay free pending his appeal. There's one qualifier I should say, though, which is that this particular judge is very unpredictable and sometimes thinks out loud and voices an opinion about how he's going to rule, and sometimes on some very important things. And then and looks at the case law, studies it, and comes back and has a different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the greatest likelihood is that Mr. Libby will be remanded in the custody this week.
Now, Murray Wass, as you watch the trial, and in particular the reaction of Judge Walton, one of the things that it appeared to me from this distance was that he was deeply upset that the Libby defense team, led by Ted Wells, essentially represented that they had to do all this pretrial investigation. They had to get presidential daily briefs and other documents that were secret or confidential to some degree, and that this was essential to their defense so that they could put Libby on the stand. And then they didn't put him on the stand, which is their right, but given the representations they had made, do you think Judge Walton remained angry at sentencing, and was that a factor in the 30-month term?
Absolutely is to him being upset because I sat in court and heard his comments. As to whether that might have been factored into the sentencing, we don't know that because we can't read Judge Walton's mind, but you could see that the judge repeatedly in this case felt like he had been purposefully misled by the defense. And by asserting that Mr. Libby was going to testify, the defense got all kinds of privileges and things that they were allowed to introduce into evidence and things they were allowed to preclude from evidence to give them an advantage. And so when it didn't come to fruition, Judge Walton let the defense know right there in open court that he wasn't too happy with it. And there were at least a couple other times when he was really visibly angry with the defense because he felt misled by them. Whether that goes to how the defendant is treated on sentencing is unclear, and you kind of hope that it doesn't, because it might reflect on the attorneys more than the defendant. But.
Well, and it would seem that in a trial about perjury and obstruction of justice that the defense would be very careful about, you know, not misleading the court.
Yeah, you would hope so. I mean, there was one thing that wasn't reported that was kind of interesting, where the defense accused Pat Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor whose day job is being the United States Attorney for Chicago, of prosecutorial misconduct, of withholding some information or, you know, not run-of-the-mill stuff, but something kind of serious. And then they had a long conference about it, and the judge quizzed, Scooter Libby's attorneys, and the judge kind of found it baseless, and again felt like he had been, you know, seriously misled. And he's a very no-nonsense judge. He's very tough. I want the truth. He wants people to, I think the sentence reflects that he wants people to reflect, respect the law, to abide the law, that there's no special privileges, whether or not you're the chief of staff to the vice president or you have 100 famous people writing letters on your behalf.
Right.
But he also kind of sees a disrespect for the court and the law when attorneys mislead him. And he was very plain-spoken, down-to-earth kind of judge. I actually experienced it personally one time. because cell phone went off accidentally, because usually in federal courthouses, your cell phones just don't work, so you don't think of turning them off.
Cause they have jammers. They have jammers or something, right?
Yeah, so I thought, my cell phone's never worked in a court, so it went off accidentally, and he said that if anybody else's cell phone went off at all during the trial, he would hold me personally culpable. And so a few people probably turned on their cell phones at that point.
Murray Wass is our guest. He's a journalist. He writes for the National Journal and many other publications. You've seen his work at truthout.org. And the new book is out hot off the presses, and it's a almost 600-page volume, United States versus I. Lewis Libby. It's the complete trial transcript plus the evidence and commentary from Murray. And it's a bargain. It's under $13. How'd you pull this off?
We got a great publisher, Philip Turner, or mm-hmm. the editorial director, and he actually published Joe Wilson's book.
Oh, yeah.
He published Joe Wilson's book. He published the book of Tyler Drumheller,
mm-hmm.
the top CIA guy in Europe.
Right.
Published his book. So he's an intense interest in this, and it was actually his idea to do this book. And if SEALs, you know, are behind what they should be, it will continue to be his idea. Or if they start to soar and go really well, the book will be become my idea. But in all honesty, I got to say that the idea was the publisher's, and he mm-hmm. really thought that one of the things that was interesting about this is Fitzgerald doesn't want to do a final report, that he kind of sees his role as just prosecuting cases. He doesn't want to be like other special prosecutors and be a fact finder, or have, you know, any other role other than whether to prosecute or not prosecute someone. So unlike other special prosecutors who have put out final reports, this is probably the final record or public record of anything to do with this case. So this is probably the closest thing to a public reckoning or public accounting of what went on in this specific case, obviously.
Dave joins us with a question from Eureka today. Hello, Dave. You're on the air with Murray Wass.
Hey, Peter. And Murray, I'm wondering if anybody who sat through that trial would likely come away with a feeling that Scooter probably acted alone.
I think the evidence was very strong, and I think the special prosecutor suggested as much, and the defense suggested as much, each for their own reasons, and I think the judge's statements as well. They all believe that there is strong evidence that Scooter Libby didn't do what he did without the approval or direction or even authorization of the vice president.
Well, let me pause here for a break, Dave. That's a powerful question. I was going to explore it, and so you did me a favor here. Thanks for your call today. And Murray, stand by. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back and air that out a little bit further. If you have a question or comment, Murray Wass is with us until the bottom of the next hour. We're going to shift gears and talk about some other issues he's been reporting on after the top of the hour. In particular, the U.S. attorney scandal and the amnesia problems of Alberto Gonzalez. That's coming up as we continue. Again, if you have a question or comment, get on the line now. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Program.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. MPG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey. PG.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
People are talking about the show on KRXA 540. Does it really suck less?
You guys are, in many ways, so self-referential that it doesn't let a guy like me feel like he can be part of the conversation.
We try not to be too self-referential, and we'll try to catch ourselves. I appreciate your call.
I wish I knew what that meant.
I wish I knew what that meant. Okay. But you're sucking less than you used to.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show from San Francisco. It's 9 minutes away from the hour. Murray Waas, W-A-A-S, is our guest. His powerful new book is the transcript of the Scooter Libby prosecution, complete with the documentary evidence, the exhibits that were introduced, and commentary from Murray, who covered the trial from beginning to end. And Murray, let's expand a little bit on Dave's question about, you know, whether or not Libby acted alone. And let me roll a bunch of questions into one here and let you talk for a couple of minutes, because you mentioned that Fitzgerald's not going to write a final report. So we're not going to know what he knew about the extent to which there was a conspiracy to leak this information about Valerie Plame Wilson in violation of a statute. And that, you know, we won't know how high it goes. But the evidence introduced from the handwritten notes of the vice president to the sequence of events of how Libby learned the identity of Joe Wilson's wife and where she worked, you know, right down to the testimony of Kathy Martin, who I think was as pivotal as Tim Russert in many ways. It's clear that this was an orchestrated effort coming out of the vice president's office, and that Libby didn't do anything without explicit approval or direction from Dick Cheney.
Well, virtually everything that Scooter Libby did to attack the credibility of Joe Wilson, to defend the administration against the allegations made by Joe Wilson, step by step, you see at the trial, the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, is essentially calling the shots, deciding exactly what to do, the talking points to the press. He decides which reporter to talk to, whether it's Judith Miller. He talks it over with Scooter Libby and sometimes makes that decision. Which information to declassify. Again, the Vice President made that decision. There was a national intelligence estimate, which the vice president thought would get him off the hook, just like they thought the role of Wilson's wife in sending him to Nigeria would get him off the hook. And in that case, Scooter Libby, the testimony by everybody was that Scooter Libby was reluctant to do that, that the vice president actually pushed him to do it, and that Scooter Libby asked the vice president if he could get the president of the United States to authorize the release of this classified information. And then even with the president's authorization, Scooter Libby still went to the vice president's counsel, a guy named David Addington, and mm-hmm. asked for legal opinion just to make sure it was legal. So he wasn't taking the president's word for it and authorization for it, or the vice president's warden authorization for it as well. So in every single act that he did in this play, so to speak, the one instance where he does something on his own, but Scooter Libby doesn't admit to do it, that's what he was found guilty of, lying that he didn't do this, was outing Valerie Plame and giving that piece of information to the press.
Mm-hmm. Now, Murray, as you watch this, do you feel that Fitzgerald was holding back? Was he pulling punches? Was he, making a big deal out of Scooter Libby in order to give the vice president a pass?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I think Pat Fitzgerald is there to make a criminal case, to make that case, like any prosecutor, federal or local prosecutor, he's there to make that case on that day. And when that case before the jury get the verdict he wants and the sentence that he wants, and effectively he did that. He got four felony convictions of five that he asked of the jury, and then he got an extraordinarily tough sentence from the judge as well. But it's his role in any particular case to go after that verdict. And the role of the vice president or politics or anything else aside, that's always going to be in the back of the mind of the prosecutor. So he didn't pull his punches, but he didn't have an agenda of protecting or hurting the vice president. He would have pushed whatever would have helped this case.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Dale in Santa Cruz. Dale, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with reporter Murray Wass.
Thanks. As an old reporter, I know what he speaks of. In fact, having covered federal corruption cases, here's my question. What's to stop Scooter Libby from just sitting quiet, going to prison, getting what the president can give him, namely a pardon perhaps, and getting eventually after he gets out, if he doesn't get the pardon, the millions of dollars in hush money that the vice president could be just kind of smiling and smirking off to the side and saying, Scooter, it's yours. Come
well,
on.
You know, Dick's got...
My question is, what's it going to take for this guy to roll?
Gotcha. And Dale, remember, Dick Cheney has $20-25 million of Halliburton profits that he's promised to give to a charity, and maybe it'll be the Libby Foundation.
You got it.
Go ahead,
thanks,
Murray.
I'll take it off the air.
Okay, fine. Murray, go ahead.
I don't think he can do anything like that. I don't think the vice president or anyone in his administration would give any money directly to Scooter Libby because it would just be outright illegal. But the political allies, because he's taken the vice president's side, have indeed raised money for him for his legal defense. And he has gotten millions of dollars to defend himself, to pay defense lawyers that you or me or anybody else wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And it would be really tough to get him to flip or talk. I don't know that Fitzgerald holds out a lot of hope, but the fact that a tough sentence was, given here 30 months might be a possible inducement, but everything we know about Libby in this case, I think it would be doubtful that he all of a sudden would have a change of heart and go to the prosecutors and say, hey, I got this information about the vice president.
Well, and Fitzgerald didn't even attempt to structure it with leverage, where either the indictments or the sentencing would have been based on his cooperation.
Well, I think after the sentencing, that they can go attempt to get Mr. Libby's cooperation. But by trying to get the toughest possible sentence, that's one form of leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's probably the most important leverage. Like, I can tell you I probably wouldn't do too well to be in jail for a couple hours, long, 30 months. So,
Murray, just time for one more question, and then we're going to continue after the top of the hour. Was Karl Rove ever indicted, as Jason Leopold at truthout.org reported?
No, I mean, Karl Rove has never been charged in this case.
Uh-huh. And the sealed indictment at the courthouse in Washington, you're aware of that?
There's no such thing.
Okay.
It's just there's no such sealed indictment of Karl Rove or anybody.
Uh-huh. Okay.
In this case, I think that's been pretty well demonstrated long ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for that. We'll continue after the top of the hour. We'll talk a little bit more about the Libby case. If you're on the line, hold that line. And then we're going to shift gears to the investigation of the firing of U.S. attorneys by U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. That's ahead next hour as we continue with journalist Murray Wass. His new book, The United States versus I. Lewis Libby. It's out in soft cover. You got to get it. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Are vaccines a factor in autism?
Parents of autistic children get their day in court. I'm Dan Ravine.
In Colorado, a young woman's sudden death.
We've confirmed the diagnosis of tuberculosis.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Congress more than 20 years ago established a vaccine court to decide on compensation for children harmed by their childhood vaccinations. Today, that court opened hearings on claims that link vaccine to autism.
3 weeks of hearings expected, the most poignant testimony from Teresa Cedillo, whose daughter Michelle, after her measles shot at age 2, had seizures, couldn't lift things, stopped talking, and doctors were stumped.
They told me that sometimes children will do that. Sometimes an only child will resume speaking later.
She and 4,800 other families want compensation from a multi-billion dollar fund set up by Congress, but federal experts will testify that you cannot blame vaccines for autism. Dan Revive, CBS News.
Now this.
This is Rocky Moselle. This Father's Day, give your dad the most unique gift he'll ever receive. Name a star after him. The International Star Registry will name a star after your father for $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. The beautiful gift package will be personalized and the star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the gift that shines forever.
Can you guess where is Michelin Man? After driving 2,000 miles from L.A., he's pulling up to the world's largest baseball bat, 7 stories high. For his big trip to the Big Bat, he chose Michelin Primacy MX-V4 tires. Smooth ride, mile after mile, and an unprecedented 60,000-mile warranty. So take a stab, or should I say swing, at guessing Michelin Man's location. Then visit MichelinMan.com/guesswhere for the answer. Plus more on Michelin Primacy MX-V4 tires.
Michelin, a better way forward.
In the wake of the TB Traveler case comes word that a young woman has died of tuberculosis at a Colorado Springs hospital. Dr. Ned Collange, the state's chief medical officer, says the victim, a foreign student, died Friday just hours after arriving in the emergency room.
This is not an outbreak. This is a single case. And so the approach from a public health standpoint will be to find out who may have come into contact with the student during the period in which the student may have been communicable.
They're also running tests to see if it was drug-resistant TB, like the strain Andrew Speaker is being treated for in Denver. It's another setback for the Bush administration's anti-terrorism strategy. CBS News reporter Stephanie Lambidakis has details of today's action by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond.
The 2-1 ruling against the administration involves one individual, Ali Al-Mari, described as an Al-Qaeda sleeper agent. Al-Mari was arrested in Illinois after the 9/11 attacks, but was later branded an enemy combatant and transferred to the military. The ruling compares Al-Mari to the Unabomber and Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh, stressing that if someone is arrested in the United States, the president does not have the power to detain civilians indefinitely.
For the past 4 years, Al-Mari has been in solitary confinement at the Navy brig in Charleston, South Carolina. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez has been spared the embarrassment of a Senate no-confidence vote. Late today, CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports Republicans managed to block it.
This was a rare move, trying to vote no confidence in a cabinet officer, and would have had no practical effect in any case. Only President Bush can decide if the Attorney General should stay in office. Democrats, outraged by what they say has been incompetence and is misleading Congress about the firing of U.S. attorneys, want him to go. Republicans did not try to defend Gonzalez, but said this was a meaningless political ploy, and so used a procedural vote to kill him.
President Bush is heading home from Europe, hoping he can rescue the immigration bill. Tomorrow, he'll have lunch with Republican senators on Capitol Hill. Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid says he'll bring it back to the floor if Mr. Bush can get more Republican support. How can two men lift more than 17 tons? By doing it in space, where weight isn't a problem. It's just the awkwardness. CBS News correspondent Peter King joins us live with an update on the spacewalk by two astronauts from Shuttle Atlantis.
A robot arm did the heavy lifting, Bill. Now Jim Riley and Danny Olivas are about halfway through their spacewalk.
Hey, Jim, what's going on?
They're trying to be very careful.
Okay, Joe, just for a reminder of the warning that there is a sharp edge.
As they connect a new solar power truss for the space station. Now, on the ground, engineers have been looking at that thermal blanket that peeled back near the tail and protruding gap filler underneath Atlantis. Will an extra spacewalk be needed to fix it? We've just learned that we may have an answer in about an hour, Bill.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
And now, the Orkin Inspectors.
Love is in the air. Two insects meet. They make quite a pair. It's mating season. Orkin stops mating season. In your home, their budding romance won't have half a chance. It's mating season.
Gone. For pest protection that performs, call 1-800-ORKINMAN or visit orkin.com.
Get the good stuff.
Hi, Michael Waltrip here. You don't have to drive a 500-mile race to know the importance of getting the most out of a tank of gas. Let NAPA help make your fuel go further with 3M Complete Fuel System Cleaner for just $8.49 a bottle. It not only keeps your car running smooth, it also restores power and fuel efficiency. The pros have trusted 3M car care products for years, and you can too. NAPA, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
If you're caught with cocaine, the...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for joining us today, 7 minutes after the hour. Our guest continuing with us is journalist Murray Waas, W-A-A-S. He writes for the National Journal. You may have seen his work online at many different outlets. And he's published a powerful new book all about the Libby trial. It includes the complete transcript and lots of great exhibits. We don't have time to go into this, but the exhibits in the back of the book are fascinating reading and will give you a sense. For example, I was just looking at the handwritten notes of Matt Cooper from Time Magazine, and also some of Libby's notes here. It's very interesting stuff. And, Murray, what stands out for you? What was a pivotal moment in the trial or the most critical testimony?
By the way, I knew that music to be Hawaii 5-0.
Oh, good.
That just played.
Okay.
So I want to at least show that I have some kind of musical intelligence. But I think the U.S. attorney firings would be a case for 5-0.
Yeah, indeed.
I think it would be. I think that would be a decent movie.
Book them all, Dano.
Yeah. I didn't say that. I'm not allowed to have opinions.
But, oh, that's right. You're a journalist. I forgot.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to have that opinion. But good comeback. There were many moments. I mean, the most fascinating thing for me was Kathy Martin, because
mm-hmm.
she talked about the manipulation of the press. She walked you inside what happens in the administration, or in this particular administration, and how stories are shaped and public opinion shaped. And I don't know that we've had that detailed a view ever of any president in a long time.
And it's important to note that her hubby is the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Kevin Martin.
I believe so, yes.
It is? Yeah, that's true.
I haven't socialized with them lately, but from what I read,
mm-hmm.
that apparently is true, sure.
Yeah. So why was it, I guess, you know, everybody knows Tim Russert, and his testimony was seen as the real clincher. But I agree with you that Kathy Martin really revealed the mindset of the White House, the way, oh, yeah, we'll just go on Russert. It's a friendly forum. We know how to manipulate that. And she also corroborated some of the key points where Scooter Libby knew about the identity of Joe Wilson's wife after claiming that those were times when he was in that memory loss mode.
Well, Kathy Martin was one of eight witnesses, eight government officials who testified they told Scooter Libby about Valerie Plame working for the CIA and that she might have played a role in sending her husband on his mission to Niger. So Scooter, the essence of the case was that Scooter Libby testified under oath that when he gave information about Valerie Plame and her CIA employment to different various reporters, that he was just passing along scuttlebutt or rumor that he heard from Tim Russert. And he was very careful to say to the other journalists that he was passing along rumor or scuttlebutt. But Kathy Martin was one of eight government witnesses, one of eight people, including officials of the CIA, high-level State Department officials. In Kathy Martin's case, a colleague of Scooter Libby in the vice president's office who said they told him that Valerie Plame worked for the CIA prior to him giving the information out, the name out to different reporters to try and get them to write stories about it. So in that sense, her testimony was very powerful, too. I don't know if people also know that one of the people who told Scooter Libby, one of the many people, but who didn't testify at the trial, that Valerie Plame worked for the CIA and sent, actually the first person to tell Scooter Libby was Vice President Cheney.
Right, on June 11th.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then after that, a score of public officials, the third highest ranking official at the State Department, a CIA briefing officer who briefed the Vice President Scooter Libby, another senior CIA official, all these people had very distinct, vivid, detailed testimony about their conversations with Scooter Libby, and Scooter Libby couldn't remember a one of them.
Yeah.
And one of those was with Kathy Martin, so her testimony is probably particularly powerful for the jury in that what would be her motivation to lie? Why would she be out to send her colleague, her boss, to jail?
And for people trying to place her, she was a press secretary or assistant press secretary to Cheney?
I think at the time she had the top position. During some of these events, she was a deputy to Mary Maitland, the wife of Jim Carville.
Right.
And so I think at the time of these events, she took over. She was the chief spokesperson or chief public affairs person for the vice president.
Right. All right, let's take a call from Deborah in Carmel. Welcome, Deborah. You're on the air.
Hi there. I wanted to share something that I think I learned by listening to C-SPAN coverage back in March of the Waxman Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and it was the day that they were getting into this whole issue of Libby and who knew what, and on the third panel, there was a woman by the name of Tosing, T-O-E-S-I-N.
Yes.
And she identified herself as someone who had worked with Barry Goldwater back in the day, and that she personally had helped write the legislation, the law, that apparently Fitzgerald could find no one qualified to have violated the law. But you could just see in her body language the pride with which I interpreted it. They on purpose made this law with such a high standard that basically you guaranteed in the future no one could be found guilty of violating it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went on to say, and the smirk widened, she talked about a phrase that was common in the office. They called it the rule of 38. And that is that if 38 people at least, a bunch of people, knew about the wrongdoing, that basically that guaranteed they felt that no one could ever be convicted of a crime.
All right, let's get a comment from Murray. Go ahead, Murray.
I think they were the law to make it difficult because they had First Amendment concerns. You know, that they didn't want to, primarily they were worried about the left, that some left-wing journalists or some journalists would identify someone. And so the people who authored the law had more concerns about this. I don't think in their wildest imaginations would they have thought that someday the chief of staff to the vice president of the United States would be charged with outing a CIA agent. So I think the law was written with some good intentions, but the good intentions were to protect the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And there's a liberal Democrat congressman from New Jersey, Rush Holt, who's introduced some legislation to kind of fix loopholes in the law. And so it's a balance between First Amendment, but also money to hold accountable someone who does this. But I don't think it was even within anyone's mind that mm-hmm. the government itself would leak the name of its own covert agent, or not the government, that you'd have rogue officials high up in the government
right. Who
would think of doing something or even contemplate doing anything like that.
Now, Murray, before we move on to the U.S. Attorney flap, one final question from me, and that is I'd like you to comment on my speculative scenario here. I feel that the folks who concocted this whole scheme, which included Scooter Libby, was not exclusive to him, had the idea that by blaming Tim Russert and Judy Miller and other reporters as the source of this, that this would never wind up at trial because no prosecutor would ever want to put somebody like Judy Miller, a journalist, in jail. And that when Fitzgerald actually did that, it stunned these people, but it had the desired effect of buying them time past the 2004 election.
That's absolutely right. They perceived, I think, the evidence at trial, the testimony and other information shows that Scooter Libby and Karl Rove and other people in the administration believe that based on in the past that journalists don't testify, they don't give up their sources, and the Department of Justice doesn't work exceedingly hard to make them happen, that the journalists would just never testify. So if you're not going to have, you can say you had a conversation with Tim Russert or say you had a certain conversation with Matt Cooper, but believing they're not going to testify and thinking it's likely that they're not, and based on everything you know about what's happened in the past that reporters haven't, that gave people kind of a confidence or at least allowed them to take the risk of going before the grand jury and misleading it and lying to it in the case of Scooter Libby being charged and convicted.
All right, very good. We're going to take a break and return. Once again, the book is The United States versus I. Lewis Libby, that's Scooter, to his friends. Murray Wass is our guest. The book is out in softcover for under $13, and I think it should be on your bookshelf. I think you should read it, too. We're going to take a break and resume with some questions for Murray about reporting he's done about Alberto Gonzalez firing U.S. attorneys and the ensuing flap. If you have a question or comment about that, get on the line now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. Collins.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping.
Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Monday, a little Monday traffic for you. And let's give you the very latest. So, CHP telling us about a problem in... let's see here, Santa Clara. We had interlaking. It's a gate drive at Lapis. It's a crash in the shoulder, two vehicles. And then we have a situation working right now in Prunedale, which is on Southbound 101 after Crazy Horse Canyon Road. There are chunks of tire tread scattered all across the lanes, and so that's really creating quite a big problem. Quick reminder, Scotts Valley between Crescent Drive and Vine Hill Road construction taking place mostly through the night. Northbound to work is from 9 to 4:30 a.m., and that's Monday through Friday. And then southbound hours are 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. That's 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. in the morning, so be advised. Support brought to you by McDonald's. It's huge, it's icy, it's Hugo. McDonald's.
Senator, I don't remember. I'm responsible, but I don't know if there was a meeting. I don't know how those names got on the list, Senator, but I'm responsible.
I've got to work on my Alberto Gonzalez impersonation, clearly. But at this hour, I am saddened to report to you that he is still the Attorney General of the United States. The Senate voted on a no-confidence measure, actually to close debate on a no-confidence measure, and that failed. They needed 60 votes and only got 53 today. So he remains in office at this time. And this, of course, follows on months of shifting commentary from the Attorney General. In my view, he has repeatedly lied under oath to both the Senate and the House. And yet the President retains confidence in him, dismisses the no-confidence effort as a meaningless political vote. And so far, that's correct, because they didn't get to 60. Murray Wass continues with us, the reporter based in Washington, and he's written some great pieces for the National Journal about this case. And Murray, to cut to the quick, Monica Goodling, under immunity, testified about vote caging. And to me, that's the tip of an iceberg about the Republican attempts to use political appointees, including those in the U.S. attorney positions around the country, to front politically motivated prosecutions that would make Republicans look good and, in my view, obscure some of their murkier efforts to deny people access to a ballot or to actually manipulate the results once people have voted.
Correct. I mean, that's a big part of the U.S. attorney scandal that we're finding out, that a lot of this had to do with replacing U.S. attorneys who they didn't think would aggressively pursue allegations of voting fraud. or allegations by people associated with Democrats that they were, you know, engaging in fraud, which for the most part turned out to be unfounded.
Well, almost entirely unfounded.
Yeah.
There are a handful of cases, and they are really weak.
I mean, the New York Times did an investigation of this, the McClatchy newspapers, a lot of academics, and so there's very little, there's no organized effort by anyone in the Democratic Party or any political group or anyone other than, you know, case by case, you know, some individual cases where people have engaged in fraud or voted twice or weren't eligible.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's just not there.
Yeah,
it's just kind of a myth that was kind of perpetrated or perpetuated within the White House until it was kind of believed, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you understand, based on his testimony last week, that one Bradley wants to amend his testimony?
Yeah, I mean, he did an extraordinary thing, and I interviewed the guy he succeeded, Todd Graves, his U.S. attorney. They didn't like, let me tell you about the guy who Schlossman replaced as U.S. attorney, Todd Graves. He's a Republican. He comes from a Republican family. He likes Dick Cheney. If you make a comment about Dick Cheney, he might take slight offense. But there was pressure on him to bring certain voting fraud, one particular voting fraud case, and specifically which he thought had no merit. And sure enough, he reluctantly agreed to it, but opposed it. And it was later thrown out by, with derisive language by the federal district court judge who heard it, who said he couldn't find any, the federal district court judge said they couldn't find any evidence of voting fraud, that the government didn't take its case, they didn't know of a single vote that was stolen, and the lawsuit itself was unconstitutional. So the courts kind of backed the U.S. attorney, this guy Todd Graves in Kansas City, Missouri. And so when he was reluctant to bring cases like that, they replaced him with this guy Schlossman, who's from the Civil Rights Division.
Mm-hmm.
And Schlossman has been the advocate of going after these purported voter fraud cases.
Right. And he brought one right before an election, which produced an outburst from the ordinarily mild-mannered Patrick Leahy.
Correct. I mean, 4 days before the election, a very close, tight election in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, this is Jim Talent and Claire McCaskill, and McCaskill won by a very narrow margin.
Correct. And so 4 days before the election, the indictment was brought, and that goes against Department of Justice guidelines, which prohibit the bringing of such charges so close to elections because they can affect the outcome of the election.
So what kind of a do-over does Schlossman have in mind? What does he want to change in his testimony?
Well, he's saying he was directed, I believe, to have done this by somebody in the public integrity section to do it, and he acted on their advice, and he's kind of passing it off on this person.
Yeah.
And so apparently that official named DeSanto and some other officials in the public integrity section have said no. We proffered advice. We didn't direct him to do anything. And so Schlossman now, according to a report in Bloomberg, a great news story, they broke the story. He's going to go back and amend his testimony tomorrow.
Oh, just like Carl Rose, five trips to the grand jury. Jake joins us from Arcata. Go ahead, Jake.
Hey, Murray. Hey, real quickly, this inability of the Senate Democrats to even get a vote of no confidence, they only got 53 votes, it's just another reason why Harry Reid has to be replaced. The guy is not able to pressure his Republican colleagues into doing the right thing, apparently. But what are the House Democrats going to do now? Are they going to do the right thing and bring up articles of impeachment against Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, that's what I'd like to see. Murray, what do you hear?
I can't voice my opinions because of You know, being a reporter.
Yeah.
Apparently, there won't be an impeachment proceeding against the Attorney General, or there's no indication of that anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on, though, is the president really can't fire Alberto Gonzalez, nor can he really resign, because Patrick Leahy, this is kind of an unpublicized fact, or something that I'm surprised hasn't been reported.
Okay, 20 seconds, go ahead.
But the Democrats have said, and Leahy said, that if you don't if you don't give us the documents we want and the White House doesn't produce the information we want and produce Karl Rove for testimony, we're not going to confirm your next nominee as Attorney General, and therefore the Attorney Generalship will be vacant.
That's a very interesting threat. Murray, we're out of time. Jake, thank you for your call. And Murray, I'd love to talk with you again. We'll follow up about the U.S. Attorney case, and thanks for a great book, U.S. versus Scooter Libby. That's Murray Waas, W-A-A-S. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
It is so nice to be loved. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. And over the weekend, Albanians made it clear that they love America.
From history, we know that America is a friend from Albanian people.
I love America.
And they love our president.
The president of America is the best president of all the world.
How about that? Their hearts and minds are in the palm of our hands. Citizens of a mostly Muslim country with a crush on George W. Bush. But why? Well, we read in the New York Times that it dates back to World War I, when President Woodrow Wilson saved Albania from being split up. That was 90 years ago. Ah, but it's in every Albanian textbook, so children are taught early on to love America. Well, there it is. First tip for winning hearts and minds. Win them among people who have already been taught to love you from childhood. Another reason is because in 1999, we came to the aid of Albanians being massacred by the Serbs in the neighboring Yugoslav province of Kosovo. The U.S. led a NATO bombing campaign against the Serbs. And today, we are squarely in favor of making Kosovo independent, which is something supported by 96% of Albanians in Kosovo. There it is, another tip for winning hearts and minds. Put your foreign policy on the side that most of the hearts and minds are already on. Indeed, our approach to Albania, that being to do what most Albanians actually want, has been so effective that on the eve of the president's visit, one local newspaper printed a headline reading, "Please Occupy Us," which, strangely enough, is the one thing we opted not to do back then. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging.
And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial.
Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use.
That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters in Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
Live.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. On a summer night. Check this one out. Staring at the sea. Tell me, is there something wrong? You can talk to me. I can hear it in your voice. Strange weather, that's from Glenn Frey. And it was kind of a mild, chilly May, but here in the San Francisco Bay Area, summer appears to have arrived. A nice, sunny day here around San Francisco Bay. I'm Peter B. Collins, and joining us this half hour is a freelance journalist who's published a great piece in the current issue of Mother Jones Magazine, Kimberly Lissagor. Kimberly, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You answer some questions in here that I've had on my mind for a while.
Because you and me both.
I do understand that in order to try to reduce our personal contribution to global warming and the climate change issues, that we can buy carbon offsets. And, you know, most recently the right wing over the last few months was attacking Al Gore for publicly espousing, you know, limitations on our emissions while he's been paying a honkin' big utility bill at the family homestead in Nashville and was dinged, I guess, for, you know, just being environmentally reckless with his own personal
right.
life. And so he's been cleaning up his act, and I guess he bought some green power, and he purchases carbon offsets, too. But I'd like to know how the carbon offset system works and how it's different from the medieval system in the Catholic Church of buying indulgences.
Absolutely. It's a great question, and that's one of the first things people think of naturally when they think of this sort of ability to take your environmental sins and hand over your credit card and have them be magically cleansed. And it's not quite that simple because you're doing some quantifiable good. So the way it works, basically, is that you take all of your, you can calculate your environmental emissions, your greenhouse gas emissions, and take the total number and convert it to a dollar figure using various programs that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you invest that amount of money in various offsetting programs like windmills or methane converters that are happening in this country and all over the world. And depending on the program you use, the middleman you use, you can then say that you have offset a certain amount of pounds or tons of carbon emissions and know that you have come out with a sort of balance.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do I know? You list a number of the websites here, atmosphere.de, climatefriendly.com, nativeenergy.com, my-climate.com, carboncounter.org, carbonfund.org, and terrapass.com. And I'll repeat those one more time a little bit later in the hour, and people can also go to motherjones.com and access your article and get the links to these websites as well. But just picking atmosphere.de, how do I know that if I cough up $17.30 for a ton of carbon dioxide, that that money will actually go somewhere good?
You know, until recently, there wasn't a great way to make sure it was going to happen. But all of a sudden, there are some certifying agencies that have made sure that these companies are doing what they say they're going to do. So So you'd want to look for a certification like GreenE, and that's green-e.org, or some other body that can say Atmosphere is a great offset company. In fact, it's one of the most highly rated throughout all of the organizations that are doing rating.
Mm-hmm.
One report that came out in December was from the Tufts Climate Institute, and they rated a whole bunch of them. And within the programs that are available in the U.S., Atmosphere was actually the highest rated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I'm pulling up their website right now, Atmosphere, Atmosfair.de, and unfortunately it's in German.
That's true. You know, there is a way to get to the English language part. Oh, yeah, on the lower left corner there, there's a British flag.
There we go.
it does make it easier to understand when it's in your language.
My producer, Katrina Rill, is at home in Germany today, or she could translate this for me. Okay, so now
that's helpful.
Now it's in English. What is Atmosphere? Not everyone is either willing to give up air travel. Hence, for people who are concerned in regards to the environmental ramifications of their air travel, this service has been created, Atmosphere. Air passengers can donate the equivalent amount for the greenhouse gases which were caused by the flight. The funds are invested in solar, hydropower, biomass, or energy efficiency projects and contribute to, they need some English help here, neutralize greenhouse gas emissions by the same amount that would be comparable to the aircraft's emissions. And you confess in the article, Kimberly Lissagor, that air travel is perhaps your biggest contributor to carbon dioxide.
It is. Unfortunately, I do a lot of travel for work. Well, unfortunately for the environment, not unfortunately for me. And so I ended up being a bigger polluter than your average American, and Americans in general are much bigger polluters than anyone else in the world. So I definitely have some balancing to do.
Mm-hmm. And so you, for example, calculated a year's worth of flights at about 34,000 miles, and you could pay anywhere from about $65 to $168 to wash away your sins.
Right, exactly. And it's a difficult choice. I mean, you look at that and you think, well, shoot, I'm going to take the discount approach there. I'd rather spend $65 to feel better about all the travel I do. But it turns out it's kind of complicated. And each of these organizations calculates offsets in a different way. So it's not quite as simple as saying, well, I'm going to go with the best bargain. It's not like, buying socks at the market. You want to take into account how they factor in emissions. And one of the most, if I can geek out for a second, one of the most complicated things is something called radiative forcing index.
All right.
And that is the number that calculates how much different your emissions are at altitude than they would be on the ground.
I see.
So in an airplane, if you're measuring the emissions per mile, it's actually different than if you were in a car on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And some programs take this into account and others do not. It's one of those areas of science where there isn't a great consensus.
Yeah.
So, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change uses a factor of 2.7, but the World Resources Institute says it's too complicated. We're not going to factor it at all.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that is an average over the course of a flight. My impression, I'm not a scientist and I've never measured this, but that takeoff is when the most emissions are spewed by a jet aircraft.
That seems logical to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me ask you this. Working for a really enlightened green publication like Mother Jones, when you submit your expenses, including your travel receipts, is there a line on the expense report for carbon offset?
That's a really good question, and I wish that magazines actually covered my expenses. But as a freelancer, I'm an independent contractor, and so they pay a per-word fee. I would love to know if for their own editors, for instance, if they're reimbursing expenses for going to a conference. I would bet that they have some sort of offset program going on. It seems like that would be the sort of thing they would do.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to ask Big J. Harris about that next time I run into him. And do you know, on a broader sense, to not just picking on Mother Jones, but have any corporate entities decided, yes, we will reimburse our employees for a reasonable carbon offset expense?
Yes, it's becoming more and more common. And I cover travel more than anything. so I'm more familiar with it in the realm of travel. But quite a few travel providers, for instance, are paying to offset the travel of their clients. So you're not only talking about their staff, you're talking about everyone who takes a trip, whether it's a cruise or a tour in a foreign country. They have decided to start covering the price of the offsets as a way of giving back to their customers.
Mm-hmm. And I don't imagine that the IRS has yet ruled that the cost of carbon offsets a freelancer like you would incur would be a legitimate business deduction as part of your travel expenses.
Not to my knowledge, but I'm certainly going to ask my accountant now that you've brought it up.
Kimberly Lissagor is our guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have any questions about how the carbon offset system works, the cap and trade system, what we're focused on here are the systems, fledgling as I think they are, that have been set up for average individuals, consumers. And it's great information. You can find it at motherjones.com. Now, Kimberly Lissagor, tell me this. Is this a model for the larger exchange of cap and trade credits and offsets? And is that yet a workable system in your view?
You know, that is a system that I don't have a thorough understanding of. It's such a new concept. The bigger trading realm has been around for a little bit longer, but all of it is relatively new, and so the kinks are still being worked out. I do think that in the long run, it'll be a viable system, and it's getting better every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just clicked on another page here at Atmosphere about how their system works. In case you ever want to travel to San Francisco, theoretically you can take a cruise, not available to everyone. And it goes on, despite awareness that this mode of, that air travel contributes significantly to greenhouse effect, hence for people who are concerned, by using an emissions calculator, that's what I need. I'm clicking on that right now.
And yeah, those emissions calculators are wonderful tools. You can take everything that you've, you know, every environmental sin you've committed and plug it in and see exactly what the cost is.
All right, let's just take a gander here because next week I'm flying to Washington to participate in a progressive conference called the Take Back America Conference. It's all green all the time. So I'm flying from Oakland to Dulles. And let's see if it can calculate for me return. Okay, calculate emissions. Let's see if it can give me an idea. Oh, it just found the airports. Okay, calculate. Please calculate. I'm ready. Apparently, they're using a solar-powered calculator.
Right, and it has to go from here to Germany and back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so round-trip emissions per passenger, 2,080 kilograms of CO2. Compared to...
Yes, that's the other problem with using a Europe-based site, and the measurements aren't in units that we Americans understand.
Right. So, okay, it's about 2,000 kilograms, and it says the climate-compatible budget for one person in a year is 3,000. So just using that as a reference, they're saying that this one trip will put me two-thirds of the way to the average for individuals.
It's a little too easy to do, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so now I've calculated the emissions. How do I... Oh, here we go. Review payment. I think I have a cart. I have a cart here, and I'm ready to check out. Go ahead, Kimberly.
Is that right?
Yeah, now it
so
wants...
give you a price in
euros. It wants 43 euros for 100% of my emission share, or I could cheat and say 50%, then it's only 21 euros.
There you go. Well, 43 euros, according to my calculator, is about $57.
Ouch.
Yep.
What happened to the dollar?
Well, one of the people I interviewed, who's one of the foremost experts on this as it relates to travel, said that a decent offset program should add about 20% to the cost of your ticket.
I see. Okay. That's not 20%. It's
not quite, huh?
No, it's closer to about 11%, 12%,
okay.
Something like that. So. I'm getting off easy.
That might just mean you paid too much for your ticket.
Well, that could be. All right, we're going to take a break and return. If you have a question for Kimberly Lissagor about how these cap-and-trade systems work, give us a call, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Coming up right after the top of the hour, we're going to talk to the new owner of Cindy Sheehan's 5 acres in Crawford, Texas, Bree Walker, an L.A.-based talk show host and former news anchor, will join us, and we're going to put her together with some of the listeners of the Peter B. Collins Show who pledged some bucks to buy that property from Cindy. That's all coming up here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last 4 decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Hello, everybody. Let's take a look at traffic, and we are going to start off with a problem. Let's see. CHP is telling us about, Interlaken Gate Drive at Lapis, fender bender, right shoulder. Two vehicles on scene. In fact, CHP actually there. And getting word of a problem in Salinas. This would be on Fontes Road at Boronda. An injury crash here, partially blocking lanes. Two vehicles. CHP, in fact, already on scene. Let's also take a look at Highway 17. Highway 17, no problems to report. Gilroy, northbound 101 after 152, two-vehicle crash. There apparently the vehicles are swerving around some cardboard in the lanes, and it's definitely causing a problem. The support brought to you by Outdoor World. Everything Dad wants, get it Outdoor World. A huge selection, expert staff will help you with the perfect follow.
On the Peter B. Collins Show, the question is, how much pollutin' is you doing?
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like airspray, air conditioners, and SUVs.
What about air travel, Elmo?
Make emissions, all of which are forming. A spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorocarbon strip away ozone. We can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and they've now deduced. The vampires of progress have come home to roost.
That's my pal Dr. Elmo. He trashed Christmas with the grandma song, and now he's working on, year-round annoyances like his global warming song there. We're talking with Kimberly Lissagor. She wrote a powerful piece for Mother Jones magazine. It is in the May-June edition. You can probably find it at motherjones.com as well. And Kimberly, during the break, I logged into another carboncounter.org.
Uh-huh.
And they have a different setup, so I can't quite get a calculation for my trip to Washington. But they ask you to estimate the number of hours you fly on an airliner per year, so I just threw in 50. And they said that that's an air travel emission of 9.1. Is that tons? Yeah, 9.1 tons of CO2 at the bottom
yes,
here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that website comes out of Portland and is operated by the Climate Trust.
Right.
What do you know about them?
That's an interesting thing. They actually allow you to calculate not just your travel offset, but your entire footprint. So I believe
you're right.
You can plug in all sorts of things about what you do on your daily life,
mm-hmm.
And so it's a bigger picture. It's not just dealing with when you're bopping around the country in an airplane.
All right.
You can calculate your home electricity and other energy. Emissions, you can calculate your drive time and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way to get a bigger picture of what you're actually doing to the planet.
Well, and I was channeling Al Gore here for a minute. I entered Tennessee and said it's a single-family residence, but they don't have a box here to click for opulent huge mansion. It just says large.
I'm so sorry. Maybe that's why Gore uses TerraPass.
So it comes in at 15.85 tons of CO2 a year. Of course, that's just an estimate. Now, why is there such a disparity based on the same amount of carbon being generated between these different websites that we mentioned?
You're right. There's a big disparity, not just in the cost of your offsets, but in the amount of emissions that you're producing. And it's really just because this is such a new science and everybody is using slightly different standards. It doesn't necessarily mean that the one with the bigger number is more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that they're using a different system. To my knowledge, there isn't a universally accepted system for every single type of way that you can emit carbon. So my tendency it would be to look to one of those outside organizations like Tufts Climate Institute, where they're factoring in all of these methods and kind of coming up with their own preferences. It kind of helps those of us who don't have a scientific background to make our personal choices.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I'm going to Washington, and one of the people that I've been promised an interview with is the brand-new senator from Minnesota named Amy Klobuchar. And today I got a release from her office that she and Senator Snow of Maine have introduced bipartisan legislation that would lay the foundation for a successful national greenhouse cap-and-trade program. This would establish the first national greenhouse gas registry, and they're calling it a carbon counter bill. And I'll read you the bullet points. They want to amend a law that will require facilities to estimate their greenhouse gas emissions and add it to annual reports. Exclude small businesses under 500 employees and $6.5 million in annual revenues. Requires the EPA to collect the data and make an economy-wide estimate, including estimates of the transportation sector. Gives the EPA administrator the discretion to create a new framework for greenhouse gas emission reporting after 3 years. Requires a third party certify the reported greenhouse gas emissions after 2010. And a couple of other points here. How do you react to this?
That's fantastic. I think a lot of people would be might be opposed to having a regulation for this sort of thing, but I think we've spent the last 5 years or so setting up the infrastructure so that very soon it will be ready for that sort of thing. And unfortunately, it's human nature, certainly corporate nature, not to voluntarily take care of this problem. And because it's so critical, and because there are so few people who are dedicated enough to do it without a mandate, I think that sort of legislation is really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, it'll set the stage for Bush's voluntary program to cut the emissions. We will require people to count them, but we'll make it voluntary for people to cut them.
Right, which basically means it's not going to happen, unfortunately.
What's your reaction to the proposals that the president made at the G8 summit last week?
I think it's a start. At least the conversation is happening. I think that, of course, things could be worded a little more strongly.
Well, and we seem to be setting a bad example for the Chinese because they, too, are saying that they want a voluntary system. They will not agree to mandatory cutbacks.
Right, Right, absolutely. Unfortunately, I think it's going to take a lot more than that. What would be ideal is if somebody can demonstrate that it's actually economically favorable to participate in this sort of program and ultimately to cut back the emissions in general, not just pay for your sins, but keep them from happening in the first place.
Well, I agree, and I think that that's understated, and the G8 summit really didn't focus on the potential benefits of tackling the climate change issues.
Right, absolutely. Thankfully, I think it's gaining momentum. Finally, the U.S. is starting to catch up with the rest of the developed world and our attitudes toward that. And so hopefully the pressure will stay on and we'll come up with some sort of resolution sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, Kimberly, thanks for a great article. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Nice talking with you.
My pleasure. Kimberly Lissagore. Read her article in the new Mother Jones or go to motherjones.com and it should be there. It's called Paying for My Hot Air, a look at carbon offset comparisons. Now, I promised to mention the websites, atmosphere.de, climatefriendly.com, nativeenergy.com, my-climate.com, carboncounter.org, carbonfund.org, and terrapass.com. Coming up next, we kick off the Free Speech Zone with Bree Walker. She made a deal to buy Cindy Sheehan's 5 acres in Crawford, Texas. We'll talk about it next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Federal health experts insist childhood vaccines have nothing to do with autism, but they can't explain why autism is on the rise. And today, vaccines went on trial in a special court. CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson has the story.
12-year-old Michelle Cedillo doesn't know it, but she's the center of a landmark case that started today in federal vaccine court, one that could open the door for thousands of autistic children to be paid by a government fund. The controversy, whether their autism was caused by their childhood shots. Created in 1986, the vaccine court has already paid out $750 million for vaccine injuries, but has never before tried an autism case. The outcome of Michelle's case will impact 4,800 other autism cases, all waiting to be heard. Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News, Washington.
Health officials in Colorado are trying to learn who might have been exposed to a foreign student who died Friday at a Colorado Springs hospital. Tests show the young woman had TB. We're awaiting word from NASA on whether an extra spacewalk might be needed to fix that torn thermal blanket on Shuttle Atlantis. Two astronauts are outside right now installing new equipment on the International Space Station. A Middle Eastern man who moved to Peoria, Illinois the day before 9/11 was arrested 3 months later, accused of being an Al-Qaeda sleeper agent. Ali Al-Mari has been in custody ever since. But today, CBS News correspondent Wyatt Andrews reports a federal appeals court ruled that a U.S. resident cannot be held indefinitely without charge.
The decision has no legal bearing on detainees at Guantanamo, but it is another hurdle for an administration that has yet to try a single enemy combatant. It will also add to demands in Congress to grant Guantanamo prisoners access to U.S. courts.
The push for a Senate no-confidence vote on Alberto Gonzalez fizzled late today. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports on how it played out.
Democrats push for this unusual vote of no confidence because they say Attorney General Gonzalez misled Congress about the firing of U.S. attorneys and politicized the Justice Department. Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid said he had to go.
Alberto Gonzalez is profoundly unworthy to hold one of the highest and most important offices of our great country.
Many Republicans want Gonzalez out too, and they did not use the debate to defend him. Instead, Mississippi's Trent Lott and others decried Democrats for a political stunt that would have no effect either way.
Is this what the business of the Senate is really all about?
Still, a direct vote would have been embarrassing for the president and put some Republicans in a tough spot, so instead they used a filibuster to avoid taking it. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he's willing to bring the immigration bill back later this month, provided President Bush can rally more Republican support. Mr. Bush, back from his trip to Europe, will try to do just that when he lunches with GOP senators tomorrow. The Dow up a fraction to 13,424. This is CBS News.
Smokey here. When you're a hardcore biker like me, it's nice to know that Geico Motorcycle Insurance covers most kinds of bikes and has money-saving discounts. It's reassuring. It's like I have an imaginary sidecar, and my guardian angel's riding in it. And he's brought plenty of juice boxes and muffins, and he's totally cool with sharing. Yeah, old Smokey's never been too good with metaphors.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
Get the good stuff.
Stop by your local Napa Auto Parts store and register for a chance to win $100 in free gas. You can also increase your fuel economy by replacing dirty air filters and changing your oil regularly. Visit Napa today and register to win your free $100 fuel card. One card will be awarded at each participating store. See store for official sweepstakes rules and complete details. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Napa fuel card managed by eCount, a city company. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
Cigarette maker Philip Morris, sued by smokers in Arkansas, tried to get the case moved from state to federal court, but today the Supreme Court said no. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula has the background.
At issue is a class action lawsuit in which the nation's biggest tobacco company is accused of marketing light cigarettes as having less tar and nicotine and being safer. This smoker is not involved in the legal action.
I could see where there could be some people who may have started smoking those thinking that they were safer. That never crossed my mind, frankly. It was just not as strong a cigarette.
Cigarette makers usually fare better in federal courts than state courts when it comes to jury awards. Jim Krasula, CBS News.
A young man in St. Louis, Arizona, got a brand new car for his high school graduation, but his parents didn't pay for it. He did, with his attendance record. 18-year-old Clemente Higuera won a raffle limited to seniors with perfect attendance. He says, I didn't think about the car, I just come to school. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
This is Rocky Moselle. This Father's Day, give your dad the most unique gift he'll ever receive. Name a star after him. The International Star Registry will name a star after your father for $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. The beautiful gift package will be personalized, and the star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the gift that shines forever.
Can you guess where is Michelin Man? After driving 2,000 miles from L.A., he's pulling up to the world's largest baseball bat, 7 stories high. For his big trip to the Big Bat, he chose Michelin Primacy MX-V4 tires. Smooth ride, mile after mile, and an unprecedented 60,000-mile warranty. So take a stab, or should I say swing, at guessing Michelin Man's location. Then visit michelinman.com/guesswhere for the answer. Plus more on Michelin Primacy MX-V4 tires.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Ooh. Call in anytime, toll-free, at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger. come around, up to no good. Broke the old treaties cause he could. Struts all around like a hood. Got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
Yeah, we got ourselves a bad president. It spawned a new merchandising scheme where you can buy little digital clocks that count down how long we have left until January 20th of 2009. Well, here on the Peter B. Collins Show on Friday in our regular segment with his Bradness, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, he broke the news that Cindy Sheehan has found a buyer for the 5 acres near the Bush Ranch in Crawford, Texas, known as Camp Casey. The new owner joins us now. She is Bree Walker, well-known in Los Angeles as a news anchor and now hosting a progressive talk show on KTLK, the Air America affiliate in Los Angeles. Bree, welcome to our program.
Hey, my fellow dangerous talking dog, Peter. I'm a fan of you, you know.
Well, thank you. I am just so grateful that you stepped forward and snatched this away from Melanie Morgan and some right-wingers who were trying to trick Cindy into selling the property to them.
You've dragged her right out of the closet and into the shining light, have you not? Because they do parade as a, quote, peace movement, and they're not. They're pro-invasion. And, yeah, I'm glad. That's when I saw that I had to do something. It was horrifying to read in the news that Cindy perhaps was going to get a bid from them, and I thought, yeah, you know, knowing Cindy's situation, that she might have to take whatever was offered. So
yeah,
I saw that as the only thing I could do, and all I had in my ability to accomplish the goal of purchasing it was to cash in all my corporate stocks, and I thought, well, how frigging fitting is that? You know? So there I am. I never was a rich woman, but I was in the corporate stocks just enough to be able to buy this land, and then I threw it out to the gods of karma, hoping that volunteers will flock to teach me how to do this right. Perhaps we'll be able to develop a brain trust of volunteers who know how to create a new 501c and the things that I need to do to further this.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Cindy's people will continue to help, but Cindy's presence will be used in other ways now. She's moving on to the next phase, which is hopefully getting some rest and peace and some health back into her life and going back home to her family in Sacramento. So.
Well, we're very grateful for what Cindy has done. And
we are. We owe her a debt of gratitude.
The hits that she has taken from the right wing, including those who had the temerity to go down to Crawford, like Melanie Morgan. And I don't want to overemphasize her, but she really is a pandering evil figure, and if we did an update of The Wizard of Oz, I think she could play the part of the Wicked Witch of the West.
Now, how do you really feel? You know, it isn't just the right-wing Neanderthals, I call them, that have done the damage to her image. There have been some on the left that also misinterpreted her coming out in her very grassroots, elemental, and speaking truth to power way, unpolished, unpublic relationed message when she said the Democrats were spineless in their promises to stop funding the war and then doing this. And she had every right to say what she felt, but even they attacked her in the end, and that was what led to her farewell. So, I think it's time for Cindy to get a rest, and the rest of us who know how to wear a flak jacket need to step up to the plate and take a shot at the bat.
Well, have you vetted your own past to be sure that when they dive through your dumpster, we're not going to see some nasty stuff about Bree Walker in the media sometime soon?
Let me tell you a fun little story. I was always a little radical, and in my youth, I'll just let it out on your program so that when Rush Limbaugh decides to attack me, he won't get the scoop. He may remember, if he digs down into his deep past, when his daddy put him into place as a radio DJ across the hallway at KUDL-FM in Kansas City was this FM rock and roll DJ. He used to call me the pot-smoking, motorcycle-driving, leather-wearing hippie chick down the hall. And so, you know, he's probably going to throw stuff out like that, but I can promise all my listeners, I was never stoned on the air. But you, those were the days of album-oriented rock and roll, and Rush was doing Top 40 just across the hall at the Kansas City station where we both started. And this is going way back.
And I imagine he was on AM playing the hits, and you were on FM taking the hits.
Laying back.
Uh-huh.
Doing long-form album-oriented rock in those days. I was one of the last progressive radio stations. We called that. That's what we called progressive back then.
Yeah.
Was rock and roll that played albums. what an old concept that is.
And, Bree, just let's check your memory here. What's the running time on Freebird?
Oh, God, I totally 12 minutes, 58 seconds?
No, the studio version is 9:08.
Okay. You see how things get slowed down in your memory somewhat?
But
you know,
Bree,
it was usually Stairway to Heaven I put on, though, when I had to run down the hallway.
Right, 7:59. That was a great one.
Yeah.
Well, when Rush does attempt to tell stories out of school from Kansas City, I don't have access right now, but I will get you a couple of OxyContin pills. And maybe you and I should do a broadcast together high on OxyContin and see if it brings out the conservative inside.
I think you're going to have to dig deeper with some stronger stuff than that, Peter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the painkillers don't even take away the pain from his message, unfortunately, and the hatred, God.
We're talking with Bree Walker here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and my lines are open. If you'd like to call and thank her for purchasing the property in Crawford from Cindy Sheehan, as she has told us, she is not an overly wealthy woman. She cashed in her stock portfolio to do this, and so now she is going to be land poor. And, yes. Bree, this is the perfect opportunity for me to tell you that a week ago when we read Cindy's so-called resignation letter on the air, the natural response from listeners, because she did put a comment in there about the 5 acres being for sale, was let's find a way to do that. Let's buy it from her and show her our appreciation for the work that she's done. Let's keep it alive as an icon for the anti-war movement and for the pro-troop movement that I think Casey embodies in both respects. And let's really, you know, find a way to keep this going, to keep it as an icon or a site for those of us who oppose this war. And perhaps 20, 30, 50 years from now, it will be a major national monument.
My hope, Peter, is, and thank you for that, that you've summed it up well, what the intent and tone of this has to be from now on. And my goal is to apply for National Historic Preservation status. First and foremost, because Cindy, whether she wanted to or not, became the face of the anti-war movement in this era, that is no small task. But also because what runs through there is the historic old Chisholm Trail, which was the wagon train tracks through West America. So there's a couple of approaches that I can take to get National Historic Preservation status, but that's down the road. What we first have to do is make sure that I get a bus somehow for July 6th, 7th, and 8th when Cindy has her 50th birthday party there at Camp Casey, and I want to load it up with Iraq Veterans Against the War from Southern California to go out there because we need a lot of uniforms on that property. The message we have to get out there is that we are pro-troop because we're anti-war.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more pro-troop than to be anti-war. Even the Iraq Parliament doesn't want us there anymore. And I remember Bush saying, when they tell us in Iraq they don't want us to be there anymore, when the Parliament says we don't want you here anymore, we'll leave. Well, what happened to that?
Well, you know, they just won't sit down. We're going to stand up when they sit down, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You betcha. And, we, you know, now's the time to really fire up. I was saying to my audience on Saturday on KTLK that you could just pick any movement at this point in the progressive arena. There are so many. Just pick one. And it doesn't have to be a big involvement. There's no excuse to sit back and say, oh, there's nothing I can do. I'm just one person. That is so the antithetical approach to what progressives really truly are. So,
yeah.
You know, I think now is the time you can do something. We have a monthly maintenance cost of about $1,500. I'm going to put it out there you know, in the ethos and see mm-hmm. what comes of my asking for help to keep that maintained. There's brush clearing that has to be done.
Well, wait a minute. W's always looking for a place to clear some brush.
No, I was thinking the same thing. Maybe I could ride my horse over there and pick him up. Oh, that's right, he can't ride a horse. See, now that's where I am more Texas than he is. I'm no Walker, Texas stranger. I'm more Walker, Texas danger, and he's about to find that out. I don't ride a golf cart through the scrub brush. I can ride a horse. So maybe I ought to go pick him up on my horse.
We're talking to Bree Walker here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Can you stay another segment?
Sure.
All right, I want to open up the phone lines, and I want to invite all the people, Eva, Rick, Michael in Kashawa, Tim, Gene, Bob and Lorraine, Peter, Susan, Frederick, Kathy, Thomas, Ed from Santa Cruz, Victoria in Columbus, and somebody named Bollinger. These are all the people who emailed me with a pledge of $100 or so to help Cindy, to help buy the property from Cindy. Now Bree is the new owner, and I'd like you to check in and let me know how you'd like your pledge used, maybe to help with the maintenance costs, the brush clearing. We'll talk about the volunteer webcam security system coming up in the next segment. And also, Bree wants to hire a bus, lease a bus, or borrow a bus to take a bunch of Iraq veterans to Camp Casey over the July 4th break when Cindy Sheehan will be there one last time to celebrate her 50th birthday. So if any of that strikes you, give me a call right now. Lines are open, 888-5, Peter B. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
And I am traffic reporter Mike O'Shea. Hey, let's talk a little about what's happening in the Monterey area, Carmel. And let's see, CHP, tell us about a situation. We had something going on in the Santa Cruz Mountains. No problems to report now, so that's certainly some good news. Updating a problem. Let's take a look at it as our computer comes down. Salinas Fontes Road at Boronda. A very interesting crash here. Two vehicles partially blocking the roadway. CHP is actually on scene along with the fire department because we do have, unfortunately, have minor injuries reported there. Other than that, we're looking pretty good, to be honest with you. Your evening commute looking outstanding. We have a little road we're going to let you know about. Northbound 1 at Emmeline, we have the off-ramp closed 24 hours a day. For our road work that's actually long-term road work. Boy, I can spit that out, can I? All right, the support brought to you by Outdoor World.
An incantation from the Gospel according to Grace Jones. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you. And I play that for Cindy Sheehan, because I think she is not a perfect political media star. She knew it. But she was perfect for the time. She provided an excellent challenge to the obstinance and downright snarky arrogance of George W. Bush, who was unable over the past 3 years to find 15 minutes to sit down, maybe even just ride over there on his mountain bike and say, "So what's up, Cindy? What do you want to talk to me about?" He just could never bring himself to do that. And some people took exception when she went to Venezuela or when she offered her comments on Israel-Palestine issues. But that's not critical to me. What matters is that Cindy Sheehan was a powerful voice willing to confront the Republicans and the Democrats who have supported them and say, "This is wrong. It must end." As we mentioned, Bree Walker, who is a former news anchor from Los Angeles, now hosting a progressive talk show at KTLK in Los Angeles, decided to cash out of her stocks and buy this property so that some right-wingers wouldn't. And we are very grateful, Bree Walker, for you for stepping forward to do that. Tell us a little bit about the process here, and I want to focus on what your needs are so that our listeners can decide if there's something they would like to offer to assist you.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter B. I need so much help. I hardly know where to begin. I'll tell you, because I am professionally, have been my whole life a mere talking dog. Now I have to learn how to be an organizational beast. So I need a lot of help in assistance therein. Number one, we want to try to get a bus to get us there July 6th, 7th, and 8th of July so that we can officially hand the reins over to me publicly there at Camp Casey and celebrate Cindy Sheehan's 50th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
There's a monthly maintenance issue of about $1,500. Each month that I'm going to try to get help with the volunteers to foot the cost of that, to keep it going. I cashed myself out by the land purchase. So I'm looking for volunteers to help me with building up these kinds of power bases. And it's a learning curve for me at this point. Becoming an activist now in the trenches, shoulder to shoulder with the Gold Star Family for Peace, which is the organization that Cindy put together.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of need to be building my base as my learning curve grows, and any help I can get with a brain trust of people who know how to do this kind of thing, they should go to a website that Brad Friedman at Brad Blog has been so gracious to set up for me, knowing I would be inundated on my own personal AOL and my Gmail accounts. He said, "Let me do this for you." So he set up BreeCampCasey at BradBlog.com for those who feel like they've either like to help out with a couple of dollars or some ideas or some fundraising efforts. If they know people that should be part of this movement and want to be, that's where they can email me, Bree, B-R-E-E, Camp Casey, at bradblog.com. Until I have my own BreeWalker.com up and built for this purpose, Brad is doing the interim work. I mean, you know Brad, that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and I'm glad to see that. And
he single-handedly got the blogosphere inundated with the information. I only planted it with him last Friday when Cindy and I came to the agreement that I would purchase it and we'd meet in Saturday's studio environment to do it live on the air. And Brad got it out that evening. And, you know, I don't have a public relations firm. I intend to have no need to hire one because I want to remain grassroots the way Cindy has been. So it's just me and my computer and my cell phone, no assistant. Ultimately, I'm going to need one. But at this moment, so yeah, I put the call out for an assistant who wants to volunteer efforts in the anti-war movement also.
And what about you're looking for people to take turns monitoring the webcam at Camp Casey?
You know, I want to put up a webcam. There isn't any webcam there right now. It's pretty rudimentary. We have one Iraq veteran who works the ground there, Carl Rising Moore, who does the brush clearing, and a couple of people that kind of just stay on the property who are part of the Gold Star Families for Peace and various members of Code Pink and the Progressive Democrats of America. So it's just a matter of how many individuals can stay there until I get there and get more infrastructure up and running to keep this not only a place where you can go to protest the war, because that sensibility has to be kept intact, and I'm going to take crap for that. I know. I'm ready. But that has to remain a place to protest our illegal occupations. And in doing so, we will also, I think, have an opportunity to reach out to the community because, frankly, Crawford, Texas doesn't even have a playground, a swing set publicly for their growing number of young families there. So, you know, that's how we're going to reach out in the community and try to make friends with them as well.
All right, the web address again, email Bree Camp Casey, B-R-E-E, Camp Casey at bradblog.com. I'm going to forward all the emails from people who said they want to help, and you can follow up with them or have your new assistant do that, Bree. And we had a listener who said he remembers you from KPRI in San Diego.
Oh, my goodness, the Remarkable Mouth commercial when I did the 7 to midnight slot as the rock jock in San Diego. He goes back a bit.
Well, Bree, thank you very much. Thanks again for doing this. We'll talk.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter B. You're the best.
Okay, thanks a lot. Your calls are coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
There's a new full-service spa and salon in the heart of downtown Monterey at 397 Calle Principal. Gigi's Spa and Salon offers massage, facials, manicures, pedicures, haircuts, and styling, specializing in hair coloring, makeup, eyelash color, and extension, all wedding needs, and much more. Gigi's Spa and Salon is an experience that you must see to appreciate. It's a beautifully relaxing experience for both men and women. All the products used are the very best. If you are pregnant and want your nails or hair colored or permed, it's not a problem because all are products are odor-free and all natural. From now until June 30th, reserve a massage or body treatment or a facial, and you will get a free special treatment that is exclusive to Gigi's Spa and Salon. The Gigi's Signature Spa Shampoo. This is an experience your whole body will never forget. Call 372-0888 now and reserve your spot so you can treat your body to the unique services that await you at Gigi's Spa and Salon. Visit MontereyGigiSpaSalon.com for more information.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly. you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We're in the free speech zone. My lines are open to hear from you right now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Are you moved to offer cash or volunteer services to help Bree Walker take over Cindy Sheehan's property in Crawford? I'd love to hear from you. Lots of other things to talk about, too. We discussed various media issues with Eric Bollert from Media Matters when we kicked off the show. We also spent an hour with Murray Wass, the journalist from the National Journal. First about his book, U.S. versus I. Lewis Libby, the scooter case. And also about the Gonzalez story and the U.S. attorney scandal. Alberto Gonzalez survived a no-confidence vote in the Senate today, where it was tabled for a lack of 60 votes. They got 53 votes. And it underscores my view that the Democrats have got to stop these polite, conciliatory, non-binding measures. You got to impeach the son of a bitch. That's what it's going to take. And pardon my language, that's a legal use under FCC rules, but I usually restrain myself. And I just feel that it is so outrageous that the man who took an oath of office is the top law enforcement officer in our country. Has lied under oath. And simply because Bush continues to support him, he still has his job. And why are the Democrats so afraid to use the constitutional process that the founding fathers, and they were mostly fathers, put in place for such an occasion? It's right there in the Constitution. And I'm waiting for some courageous Democrats to stand up and say, you know, keeping him in office is a stench that we cannot countenance. And Murray Wass, the journalist, told us that he has heard that the Democrats have told Bush that they will refuse to confirm a replacement for Gonzalez and leave his job open. I've got to think about that a little further, because that seems to be a political threat that says we enjoy having this pinata twisting that we can jab at every now and then, and we'd rather not remove it because, well, it's just too much fun and there's too much political gain available to Democrats from this. If that's their consideration, that's their calculation, I'm offended. Because we have just an egregious violator here who continues to occupy a high office. And it's not, to me, something that should be extended for political gain. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about that or anything else we discussed or something we didn't. If there's an issue you'd like to bring up, you can bring it forward right now. Lines are open. Just one is on hold right now, so there's plenty of room for your call. And by the way, KGOE in Eureka is heading into a baseball game right now. So our show is not on the air there right now, and we can't expect a lot of calls from Eureka. And that means it's incumbent on you, Santa Cruz, Freedom, Monterey, Salinas. Haven't heard from Dennis in King City in a while. And also Coos Bay, Oregon. You don't have to go silently. There's no baseball game there that I'm aware of. 888-5-PETER-B. It's the free speech zone. Use it while you can. 888-573-8372. Laird is holding, patiently, I hope, from Eureka. Thanks for your call today, Laird.
Yeah, after that speech about no Eureka calls.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
There you are. You're defying the odds.
First of all, I'd like to make a brief comment on what you were just saying about this administration.
Go ahead.
I called with this a while back. I didn't feel it worth going on the air for just this. This administration is to politics what the Genovese family is to business.
Mm.
Anyway, we'll move on from there.
We'll let that linger, and, you know, people, they have their Sopranos cookbook out tonight, Larry.
Exactly, yeah.
So
they can chew on that
and wash it down with a little Chianti. Go ahead.
What I called is, I don't think that Barack Obama, would you say it for me?
Barack Obama. That's a great Irish name.
Or Hillary Clinton can win even on separate tickets at this time. I don't think that America's ready for either a black or a woman.
Well, let me take them one by one. First of all, I think that America probably believes it is ready for a woman, at least as a candidate for president, if not actually holding the office. But I think there are many people, and there are two categories at least, who don't believe that Hillary Rodham Clinton should be the first woman president. Some of those are disaffected Democrats, largely on the left, or at least to her left, and to the left of the Democratic Leadership Council, people who believe that Bill Clinton was a good president, especially when you compare him to George W. Bush, but that we have not forgotten NAFTA, we have not forgotten the WTO, we have not forgotten the rollback in welfare benefits, which I thought was a very cruel stroke by a president up for re-election. We haven't forgotten the media consolidation that is enabled by the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was signed by Clinton after he extracted huge campaign contributions from the telephone companies and broadcasters and other affected interests. So my point is that while Clinton looks rosy, Bill Clinton does, in hindsight, that there are many of us who still have our bearings and recognize that he was a sellout from the point of view of liberal Democrats, and he changed the party. He preserved his own ass even through the impeachment process, but he did very little to try to build the Democratic Party, to try to regain control on Capitol Hill at critical times. And so his legacy is not one that I want to see extended. And as I've said before on this program, Laird, I don't support dynasty politics. I don't want to see another Bush in the White House in my lifetime, and frankly, I don't really want to see another Clinton in the White House in my lifetime. Our talent pool in this country is much bigger than that.
Okay, but what about a woman?
I think people are over that. Not everybody is. The second group that I was going to mention is Republicans. And there are some conservative Republicans who aren't prepared ever to vote for a woman, or at least, you know, not in the current zeitgeist. And there are many bitter Republicans who were amped up by all of the attacks on Bill and Hillary Clinton during the 1990s, who will never forget that, and they revel in reminding her of her stock deals and the missing documents that mysteriously showed up in the White House living quarters. Travelgate, Whitewater, all that stuff is going to be played over and over again.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, that's going to be anybody. no matter who it is, they're going to dig up dirt, you know?
But she has an identified cache of dirt.
Well, more closet than a lot of people, for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. The thing is, I think this 2008 is so important. The Democrats keep shooting themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that this is just another episode.
All right,
go ahead and take Barack.
Yeah, now let's turn to Obama. I think that the biggest knock on him is his inexperience on the national and international stage. There are certainly many Americans who will never tell this to a pollster or even perhaps to another human being. But there are many Americans who are not prepared at this point to vote for a black person for president. And I do think that that is a significant liability for the Obama campaign. But, Laird, on the other side of that is something that I think is potentially very powerful and something that can change the rules of the game. And that is Obama is very skilled rhetorically and politically. And I think that he has cleverly positioned himself in a way that causes many people who are searching for new leadership to project onto him their values, their beliefs, their political positions. And he doesn't come away with enough specifics to leave you saying, oh, he doesn't agree with me on that particular issue. And so depending on how he is ultimately defined in the rough and tumble of the campaign, either by Democratic opponents or, if he gets that far, by Republican opponents, I think that Obama can kind of change the rules and change the configuration of who votes for a Democrat. I think he might be able to draw out some people who don't typically vote or who've given up on the system. And so I'm not prepared to write him off at this point. And I actually think that he has enough positives that he can overcome the obvious liability that he holds with many Americans who can't really get past their own racism.
So I'm a little confused at this point. Are you saying he needs to be more specific or less specific?
Well, I want him to be more specific.
Okay, thank you.
But
that's what I would hope.
But his campaign consultants are probably telling him, hey, Barack, we got plenty of time to define ourselves on a specific bill, a specific point of view. Look at the way he dilly-dallied about health care. And he has come out with a plan, but it's a kind of a straddle plan. He's not willing to take on the insurance companies. He's not prepared to go for a single-payer system. And so I think it's going to be very interesting, and I welcome Obama to the race because he has a fresh face and he brings some of these new elements that I described. At the same time, I have not written him a check. I have not endorsed him. I'm in a wait-and-see mode, and I do want to wait and see exactly how he does spell out his positions and flesh out his candidacy. And from there, I'll be able to make a decision. We've got plenty of time.
Thank you for your opinion, Peter, and I hope to hell I'm wrong.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, Laird, I appreciate that. And I'll add one postscript, because it's rare that you can get real honest comments from politicians in this country. I had a very interesting lunch back in 2002 in the Senate dining room. I got to take it back. It was 2003 because we were heading into the 2004 campaign. And this lunch was with a man who's no longer living. He was a maverick senator from the state of Indiana, a guy named Vance Hartke. And he was an old white boy. And he came out of Indiana at the time when the Klan was still active. And I want to make it clear what I'm about to say is not a reflection of my own views or biases. But here was a guy steeped in Democratic politics, somebody who really wanted the Democrats to win. And he was critiquing the 2000 campaign, saying that Gore had promised him that he'd sit down and talk to Senator Hartke, former Senator Hartke, and what Hartke wanted him to do was put Senator Bob Graham of Florida on the ticket with him and not Joe Lieberman of Connecticut. Now, many of us are completely disgusted with Joe Lieberman by now, but he looked pretty good in 2000. And Vance Hartke was one of the few people during that era who was willing to say to me, you know, I like Senator Lieberman, but I have to tell you, in Indiana, There are plenty of people who will never vote for a Jew. And that's why I told Gore that if he ran Bob Graham, he would carry Indiana, and he would also carry Florida. And that could have been critical to a win in 2000, putting aside the legal challenges and the stolen votes in Florida. And so, Laird, I appreciate you speaking up and not being afraid to be branded as politically incorrect by saying that this is not your view, this is not, it doesn't reflect your sexism or racism, but you asked, is America really ready to elect a woman or an African American? And the answer is, unfortunately, you're probably right, but maybe it's the hopeful liberal in me who thinks that it's about time to turn that corner. That said, I don't want to turn that corner with Hillary Clinton behind the wheel of my sedan. We'll take a break and return for more of your phone calls. Dennis in King City has surfaced responding to my call. There's room for your call, too, here in the Free Speech Zone. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Just don't wait till the last 3 minutes and call. It doesn't work that way, okay?
Every day is an endless train. You got to ride it to the end of the line. Be a troubleshooter, blow the bad luck away, and you will make it to your station on time. And you'll find out every trick in the book, and that is only one way to get things done. You'll find out the only way to the top is looking out for number one. I mean, you keep a...
KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
the resistance.
And I think that makes us outright irresistible. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the home stretch here in the free speech zone. Your calls and comments welcome. 888-5-PETER-B. On tomorrow's program, we kick it off with one of my attorneys. And I say that in a loose manner. Carl Mayer is a great attorney from New Jersey who is representing a class action of individuals, which includes me, challenging the NSA spying program, the domestic surveillance program, the illegal wiretap program. And he's going to kick off our show for an hour tomorrow. There's a lot to talk about in the legal wrangling. The government's assertion of unprecedented broad powers under a very murky state secret privilege, and much more. So we'll be talking about that to kick off the show tomorrow. Hope you'll be able to join us. Dennis in King City heard the call and made the call. Hello, Dennis. Nice to talk to you again.
Hey, Peter B. I'm here. And listen, at 6:30 you started, and I agree with you on every topic. And I want to go back to a couple of them, Ken.
Yeah.
But I heard you use the SOB.
Yeah, I did.
What is the seven words you can't use? I know you can't say it, but you can see the initials.
Okay.
The F-bomb is probably one, right?
Yeah, the four-letter C word.
Okay.
The MF word.
Okay.
The F word.
Uh-huh.
The S word.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's four. And it's interesting because you can say that you're pissed, but technically you're not supposed to use it as a noun to refer to urine.
Oh, okay. So you're not supposed to say P-O'd?
Yeah. No, you can say P-O'd. You can say I'm pissed off.
You can't.
But apparently the four-letter word that begins with P that refers to bodily fluids is on the list.
Okay.
So how many is that?
I think we had
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, yeah. C. It starts with a C and ends with ucker.
Oh, boy, I got to think about that. Okay. Well,
I can spell. I'll spell the first part of it for you. C O, okay,
uh-huh.
And then sucker.
Oh, I got it. I got it.
Isn't this silly?
Yeah.
Isn't this silly? And last week, a court ruled that the FCC's crackdown on what they called fleeting expletives is not only ridiculous and absurd, but gosh, President Bush and the Vice President have blurted things like that out in public. So. Where's the standard?
Yeah, did they back off of that? Because the other day I heard the F-bomb on a late-night show twice, and I was just shocked.
Well, was it cable?
No. No, it was a big station in San Francisco.
Well, they're allowed to do things after 10 p.m.
Oh, okay.
It's called Safe Harbor, and the expectation is that little chillens ain't listening.
I see. Well, look, Peter, let's talk about everything you said. I agree with impeachment, and I'm saying... for Cheney, Bush, and Gonzalez. I don't know what's wrong with the Democrats, but I agree with that. Okay, then I want to talk about Clinton and Obama. You are absolutely right. Let me tell you, the Republicans have got this country so screwed up in the last, 6 years with Bush, and then even with his dad, and then Reagan, that we cannot afford not to have both houses and a president. It's going to take at least 4 years to be repair the damage they have done. And Clinton is not the answer. I agree with you 1,000%. People will not vote for her. They will vote for a Democrat, I'm sure, but they won't do it for Clinton. And I'm kind of on the fence with Obama. He might be, in a category all by his own, but I think you're right. There's still a lot of prejudice out there.
Well, and the thing about Clinton is that with her name ID and her polling profile, okay, it's very clear. She could get about 45% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she can get to 50 or 52%, and we need a president who can get, or a candidate who can get 54 to 56% of the popular vote so that you can overcome the BS of the Electoral College and the inevitable vote stealing of the Republicans.
Absolutely. Now, I said one time with you, I think I would hold my nose and vote for her, but I don't think I will this time. I would go third party if I had to. I just couldn't touch her because if you think about it, Clinton, Bill and her are globalists. He comes from a right-to-work state. He didn't help the unions at all when he was in office to speak of. And I remember all of her interviews on 60 Minutes, and I'm telling you, when they start playing all this this garbage and all of her baggage comes out, they're going to kill her.
Well, and the polling shows that she has the highest negatives of any candidate out there.
Yep.
And the Republicans will seize on that. We just saw, go to MediaMatters.org, okay? They have a lot of commentary up about the two books that were released last week, one by Carl Bernstein and the other by this guy, Jeff Gerth, who is a New York Times writer. Mm-hmm. And you see the slime that is coming out even this far in advance of the election.
Exactly.
And think what the Swift voters will do with $10 million in Republican cash.
Absolutely right. And that brings me to one little thing here. I believe the media has already picked Clinton because they want us to lose. They keep on pushing Clinton and Obama, and Edwards is way back there. They don't give him a decent coverage at all. And so I think the media is all, it's all set up. They're going to put her in so she
Well, that's an interesting angle, Dennis. The other thing is that I'm just waiting for Fox News to announce that they've hired Monica Lewinsky to team up with Dick Morris for commentary on next year's campaign.
Yeah, I do.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate your call today. That's Dennis in King City. Final word? The normally conservative 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled today that the U.S. cannot detain enemy combatants without filing charges. In a 2-1 decision, they found that the Federal Military Commissions Act from last year does not strip an alleged al-Qaeda sleeper agent of his constitutional rights to challenge his accusers in court. This is coming from a very conservative federal appeals court. They said to uphold such extraordinary power would effectively undermine all of the freedoms recognized by the Constitution, and sanctioning such presidential authority to order the military to seize and indefinitely detain civilians, even if the president calls them enemy combatants, would have disastrous consequences for the Constitution and the country. Wow. If they're getting it, maybe some Democrats can get it too. And maybe we can repeal the Military Commissions Act and restore constitutional government in this country. I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for listening today. Brian Urban has been taking your phone calls. We'll return tomorrow, same time, same stations.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com, SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Peter King, live at the Kennedy Space Center. As two shuttle astronauts spacewalk outside the International Space Station,
we have decided to extend the STS-117 mission by 2 days. And that would include adding a fourth EVA.
A fourth spacewalk, says Mission Management Team Chair John Shannon at a just-concluded news conference. Engineers have been studying that thermal blanket that peeled back near the shuttle's tail after launch.
Today it became pretty clear to us.
Clear that it needs to be repaired.
We have said that we want to fix this before we deorbit. So that's the path we're marching down.
Astronauts will do it either during the third spacewalk Friday or the fourth next Sunday. Shannon says it's not clear whether or not leaving it alone could endanger the crew during reentry, so they're taking no chances. I'm Peter King at the Kennedy Space Center. Now with more CBS News, here's Bill Whitney.
Government health experts and the pharmaceutical industry deny it, but some parents of autistic children think the problem stems from vaccines they were given as infants. The issue came to court today. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive has the story.
A federal claims panel in Washington, D.C. heard the mother of a girl with autism, Teresa Cedillo from Arizona, who testified that her daughter Michelle stopped talking, then lost her vision.
I tried to reassure myself that everything was okay.
But the young child had seizures so violent she broke a leg, and her lawyer claims scientific evidence that a measles vaccine caused her to become autistic. Hearings likely to last 3 weeks will consider her case and others to rule whether up to 4,800 800 families might get compensation from a multi-billion dollar fund set up by Congress for victims of vaccinations that turned out to be dangerous. Dan Revive, CBS News.
Authorities in Colorado Springs revealed today that a young woman who died in a hospital emergency room on Friday had tuberculosis. Now, Dr. Ned Kalange, the state's chief medical officer, says they're trying to find out if others were infected.
The majority of people with which this person had close contact will not get tuberculosis. If they do, it will not progress quickly over a short period of time. We have the right amount of time to do contact investigation, figure out who may have been exposed, and do the appropriate testing long before anyone would get ill.
The victim was a foreign student. Kalange says she came from a country where TB is endemic. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond has dealt another blow to the Bush administration's strategy for dealing with suspected terrorism.